Oh, thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Well, welcome everybody. So I call this meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors to order. I see that all five directors are present, so we do have a quorum. Also present are Ms. Duffield, Finance Manager, and Council Timothy Carmel, General Manager John Weigold, Fire Chief Hollingsworth, and Facilities Manager Carlos Mendoza. Presently, we have nine attendees in the audience. So if you will please be so good as to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. May we have the flag, Osana. Thank you. Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everybody. So, President's report today, as I'm pleased to report that I have nothing to report. So, we'll just charge forward to item E, agenda review, additions and deletions. I have one. So I guess I'll start first. The applicant for our item 8B, which is the will serve letter for tract 1804, the applicant is unable to be here today. So GM Weigold, when will you be available?
That'll be March 17th.
March 17th. All right. So that item will be heard on March 17th rather than today. All right. I will say those of you in the audience who came intending to comment on that item, because it is no longer an agenda item, you may make comment during general public comment, if you like, on that item.
I think it is March 10th.
March 10th?
Yes, March 10th, yes.
Oops. Okay. March 10th. Thank you. On the agenda. Okay, seeing none. Director Farmer, you have your hand up.
Thank you, President Howell. I'm noticing that Alex Handlers is already available in the attendees area, so perhaps we might want to move him up in the regular business to the first item.
We can do that if there are no objections. Do we have any objections to dealing with 8C before we go to 8A?
I mean, I don't know how long the discussion on the budget is going to be. I'm just trying to make it a little bit more convenient for Mr. Handlers.
Okay. Although I might say that some of the material that's in that budget might be of interest to Mr. Handlers as well. In terms, so, but okay. I don't.
Your choice.
Oh, I think it's that's fine. If no one objects, we can certainly move that up. Okay. So we will, when we get there, we'll deal with 8C first, followed by 8A. So I believe I've been told, let's see, the swearing in of the safer firefighters that was planned for this meeting will need to be postponed, because I believe, if I remember correctly, they're all off in training today. So we will do the swearing in at our next meeting. Excuse me. So now we come to item 3, board member communications. So does any board members have a announcement, brief announcement, or any kind of question for clarifying anything at all? Any kind of board member communications? All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to public safety. So I believe we do have yes from that. Yes, Mr. McDonald, Sheriff McDonald, I think the floor is yours. Would you please go ahead and let us know how things are going?
Hello, Mr. President, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. I am Stuart McDonald here with the Sheriff's Report for January. In January, in Cambria, we handled three assault and battery reports. Two of those were domestic violence, and the third was an unfounded report of domestic violence. We had 20 disturbance calls. One of those was a fireworks call on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. There was one neighbor dispute, three loud music complaints, and then 15 other miscellaneous disturbances. Four of those disturbances that were reported, the reporting person indicated a perception that the involved parties may have been transient individuals. We had zero burglaries. We had two thefts, both of which were minor shoplifting incidences. We had one vandalism reported. It was a broken window to a residence, and upon investigation, it was determined that the window had become broken by accident, not through criminal activity. There were two mail thefts reported. One of those was in the 400 block of Weymouth, the other in the 1700 block of Ogden. We had no phone scams reported to us during the month of January. We had five suspicious circumstances calls. Three of those were suspicious subjects. Two were suspicious vehicles. The deputies that patrol your community on your behalf conducted 21 enforcement stops during the month of January. 20 of those were stopped vehicles, and one was a pedestrian stop. Also during the month of January, the preventative patrol activity that the deputies engaged in, there were 11 such logged incidences. These are things like extra patrols, foot patrols, patrol checks, and the like. There was one other notable circumstance. On January 10th, we received a couple of calls of someone in the community, people that go around and offer the service of sealing a driveway. You know, sometimes that is not on the up and up. They'll knock on the door and say, oh, we have some leftover materials. We'd like to seal your driveway. And so usually that is inferior work for way too much money. And we had at least two residents call in having trouble with individuals that were engaged in this activity. Unfortunately, we were not able to get there prior to the people leaving the area. But that is that's something I want the public to be aware of. If someone knocks on your door unsolicited for services and things like that, it's a good idea to call the sheriff's office so that we can come out, check that the people are properly licensed and that they're actually providing a valuable service rather than doing inferior work and stealing basically money from people. And with that, I will open to questions from the board and or the public.
Okay, thank you. So let's start with the board. Do any board members have questions for Mr. McDonald? Seeing none, let's see if we have anything from the public. Any of you folks out there, do you have any questions here regarding the safety report or any observations to make? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. McDonald, for your report. It's a little quiet little community like this, and still there's all these little things going on. We're so happy that you guys are out there patrolling and
thank you, and I certainly look forward to seeing you again next month.
Excellent. We look forward to it. Thank you. And let us then move to the fire department here. So, Chief Hollingsworth, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, President Howell and board, community. Thank you for letting us be here today. Reporting on our activity for the month of January, we had 82 emergency responses within the community with three fires and 42 emergency medical calls. Of the three fires, it's important to note one of those was a vegetation fire in the middle of winter. Stuff still does burn, regardless of how green and or wet it may be. So let's please be careful as we just go through our normal daily activities. The other two fires were both chimney fires within town. And as we have the colder weather, people light up their chimneys and enjoy a nice wood-burning fire. However, if that fireplace has not been cleaned recently, it can be somewhat of a danger. So I just use this time as a quick reminder to the community that if you do still have a wood-burning fireplace, now is the time to get it cleaned. There are a number of reputable businesses in this county that will do that for you. It's fairly cost effective, and it's definitely worth the money to get make sure that your house can be safe and you can enjoy that activity. I have a relatively short additional thing to add, and that is just a quick update on our existing grant status so you know where we are on everything. The Zone Haven evacuation grant is moving forward. We have the steering committee developed from the various leaders within the community, including the sheriff's department, county chiefs, each location's representative, myself being the one for Cambria, and then also our county OES. We're targeting later this year for implementation. There's a lot of background work that needs to happen, but we're very excited that that's moving forward. Obviously, our SAFER personnel are on the floor and away in training today. We apologize for the delay there. We were awarded a COVID-19 supplemental grant over a year ago for personal protective equipment and additional supplies as needed. We've exhausted all of the grant in regards to what we petitioned for. However, because of the way we approached it and how frugal we were, we still have quite a bit of money left in that grant. And you never turn a grant back and give them money back. We've been awarded it. We're going to use it. But we're in the middle of writing an amendment to be able to utilize those funds, those additional funds, to help us not only here, but for the rest of the district. So that's still in process. And we're also awarded a grant from the county OES office for the purchase and replacement of the mobile radios for all of the apparatus that you see driving around. And those have all been ordered and should be in and installed within the next month. And last but not least, as you're well aware, since you approved the application, we were awarded the notice of interest application for the hazard mitigation grant specific to the emergency alert system for the community. That's a really big win for the CCSD, but just as a reminder, that's only the first step. Being approved to move forward means now we fill out the full sub-application, which is about 75 pages of data. So we are working diligently to get that moving forward. Both Craig Uferhide with CERT and Dave Pearson, a former board member, are being very instrumental in assisting in that process. So we're committing a lot of staff time to making that happen and doing everything we can to make that a successful venture. Other than that, I'm over to you for any questions.
Oh, thank you, Chief. So do we have any questions from the board? Okay, seeing none, let's move to the public. So folks out there, there are 13 of you now. Do any of you guys have any questions for the fire chief? Okay, seeing none, and I assume we don't have anything in writing regarding this. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chief Hollingsworth.
And sure, thank you for letting us be here today.
Thank you for continuing to protect us all. I do actually have a question. Correct me if I'm mistaken, but did we have a fire on the Covell Ranch in this period, or was that an earlier occasion?
We did have a fire out on the Covell Ranch. I cannot tell you off the top of my head if it was at the end of January or the beginning of February. It was right around that time. It was about a 150-foot to 200-foot spot fire on the very east side of the ranch, part of the world that most Cambrians have never seen. It's one of the most gorgeous places around. There was a fire there. The cause is under investigation. There's quite a bit of activity and resources committed to that because of its location in and amongst the trees and the amount of material that was there. We were very blessed that there was no wind that day and everything was still relatively wet from the most recent rains we had. So although it was burning significantly, it stayed in the area that it was burning. So it didn't spread that far. but it did mean there was quite a bit of overhaul in into the next day as well, and trying to remove down a dead material that was in that area to make sure it was safe and did not reignite.
Thank you. Yeah, I was kind of wondering how it might have started out there, so it'll be interesting to know if that ever surfaces.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Let us then move forward to general public comment. So this will be public comment for items not on the agenda. And for any of you who may have wished to comment on 8B, since that is no longer on the agenda, you may make a comment at this point regarding that item. So I see one person in the audience. So Osana, would you please bring Julie Amade in? Welcome, Ms. Amade. I see you here.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me okay, because I know in the past sometimes it's been a little bit challenging.
Can everyone hear me? Yes.
Again, thank you so much. I just wanted to bring Skate Day to your attention. We are in full swing for March 12th. I should say we're rolling. Saturday, 12 to 4. Distribution is just about everywhere. It's on the airways. It's on the ground. It's in local shops. We've hit our extending communities as well, those five or six skate communities around us, to go as far south as Santa Barbara. We do have our six pros locked in from Los Angeles, and I actually have a call this evening to get those final details in place, but I just wanted to say thank you. We are, of course, looking very forward to the day. We have roughly already 22 vendors put into the event, and we actually have some more time, but I'm excited that a lot of those vendors are our local nonprofits that we'd like to showcase. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Coast Unified School District. We will be getting all the distribution of the flyers to all three campuses. They'll be going out to the students by, I'm hoping, this week. But I just want to say thank you to their administrative staff on all three campuses for helping us get that information out to our students. And other than that, more to come, but Skate Day, March 12th, 12 to 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Amade. I see Crosby and Laura Swartz. So Osana, would you please bring them in? Welcome, Crosby and Laura.
Yes, hello, board and staff. This is the Laura half of the program. Last night I spoke at NCAC. You know, they had their meeting, and I was attempting to help the district. And this probably should be of interest to Mr. Weigold and Mr. Gray and Melissa. What I spoke on was the homelessness, because that was one of their speaking points last night when Mr. Gibson was giving a report. And I pointed out that Cambry is spending so much of its resource budget on cleaning up the homeless camps. And I really think Cambry should, in my opinion, should be speaking out to the county to get some help for this. Since we have the forest, we're one of the most attractive places for the homeless to live. And then when we have to clean it up, it's extremely expensive, the largest line item I guess we have. So I spoke specifically to Bruce Gibson about that, because what's happening is when we're spending the money on cleaning up the homeless camps, we don't have it to take care of our lots that was given to us by the San Luis Obispo Conservancy. The reason I spoke to Mr. Gibson about it, because this program of them giving the lots for because people could now build larger houses than what they were actually entitled to, this program was all about, and the SLO Conservancy gave us those lots. And the program was established under Mr. Gibson's rule when he was the chairman of the board of the San Luis Obispo community. So we do have an MOU with SLO Conservancy. It was brought up by Mr. Gibson. So I was thinking that he would help us fund cleaning up. It all blends together. So the county would help us clean up these homeless camps so that we could spend our money on taking care of our lots that were so nicely donated to us. He said the part of the problem was that we just needed more homeless and then things would get better. And I asked, and that's fine. But in the interim, could the county please help us with some funding to clean up some of these lots? Carlos was there for a while at the meeting, but he had left by the time I had mentioned this. So again, I'm trying to help the district get a little money to clean up our homeless camps so we can take care of things at home. Thank you. I know it was a long story, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Okay, Osana, I see Elizabeth Dettenhausen has her hand up. Could you please bring her in?
Thank you very much for promoting me to a panelist, although temporarily. I want to thank the program in SLO County, but especially the Cambria Chamber of Commerce and our local business, Ball and Skein, on the knitting materials of the universe, because they are both now members of the Community Partners in Conservation in SLO County. It's a crucial activity for businesses in SLO County, as certainly elsewhere, to reduce the amount of materials that are not readily recyclable in SLO County. And so I'm very glad that the Cambria Community Chamber of Commerce has signed on to this already. I assume that at their meetings, they're encouraging many businesses also to sign on to this. But I urge us as members of the community also to speak with the businesses that we frequent and ask them to reduce the amount of especially plastic, including styrofoam, that they use in serving their customers. Because every time this happens, it reduces the possibility that we can put the brakes on the climate crisis. I could show you now slides, umpteen thousand of them, of trash I've picked up on the beach, but I will spare you that. So I just want to thank the Chamber of Commerce and Ball and Skein for going into this already to reduce the amount of trash, actually, that we humans use to make money and then dump on the beach. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Dettenhausen. Okay, I don't see any additional public comments at this time. Osana, do we have any general public written public comment? Okay, very good. I think we're ready to move forward. And thanks to the commenters regarding Skate Day and the possible assistance from the county regarding cleanup of the homeless encampments, and certainly encouraging businesses to not create additional trash that goes out into our environment. So moving on then to the manager reports, we have, again, I'll take comment before each report, I think, which would then give the manager a chance to answer a concern that might have been raised by the public. So I'll commence by calling for public comment on the general manager's report. Yes, I see Crosby and Laura Schwartz again. So, Osana, would you please bring them in? Welcome again, Crosby and Laura.
Yes, good afternoon again. This is Crosby Schwartz. I'm not sure which of the managers might want to respond to this, but I just had a couple of requests. One would be for a report on the cost of doing the emergency repairs on the San Simeon water main. And then the second one is if they'd like to make any comments about when the district will release the draft groundwater modeling report from Todd Groundwater. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Swartz. Do we have any additional comments before the manager's report? Okay, seeing none. Again, any written comment on or at this point, Osana? Okay, thank you. GM Weigold, let's start with your report then, please.
There we go.
Thank you, President Howell. Yeah, I'll start out for Crosby. Our San Simeon cost to date, I think, is somewhere around $400,000, plus or minus. I'll defer to our finance manager, but the cost for, I don't think we've totaled up all the costs quite yet on the some of the interim costs before the main project. But I think it's going to be somewhere in and around 400,000 plus or minus. As far as the in-stream flow study, that's going to be part of our agenda item for the next board meeting on March 10th. And it'll be a subset and part of the district engineer's presentation for the adaptive management plan annual report. As you know, the in-stream flow study was a part of that, and the information gleaned from that provides information for the adaptive management plan. So that'll be next month on March 10th, and that'll be with our consultants that were part of that project. So all the questions that you have will be fielded. Now on for the general manager report. I'm going to kind of rope some of this information together in and around solid waste and our efforts to execute SB 1383, which is the organic waste disposal. Those rules and laws, that law went into effect on 1 January. However, almost every district and city in SLO is struggling to implement because of the delay with our hauler to adapt and put a new agreements in place for all of that. So as a result of that, Senator Laird had proposed and had passed SB 619, which is on the agenda today on consent under 7G. Forego penalties by putting forward a plan on when they'll accomplish those requirements. So I've got a request before the board run through district council that we will be requesting that application for 619 authorization so I can apply for that. And that will give us extra time to implement the agreement with our waste hauler. And that once we do that, that application's due by March 1st, we can outline our time frame and when we think we're going to be able to implement and get our last requirements together, i.e. the agreement with the hauler. If we didn't submit the 619 application, we would only have till June 30th to implement all requirements. And given our history recently with working with IWMA, who was trying to organize all the jurisdictions together, so with the hauler, it's just becoming a very complex negotiation. So in consult with the district council, we thought it was prudent to apply for this 619 application. Give us extra time. We can always pull the application if we accomplish the agreement before June 30th. So that's that. Electric vehicle charging station. As I mentioned in my report, the charging station, after an initial failed inspection, passed the inspection on January 13th. We're now waiting for the written approval letter from the county for that. And then once we have that, we'll press forward with getting a new design and permits to move the location. We'll also be running all of that and those options before the board to consult with the board, as well as any other interested parties, such as the American Legion at the hall. Last but not least, we had a major change last week from SLO County Health, and that was the lifting of the mask mandate. So masks are no longer required indoors at the district facilities or in district vehicles. That's for vaccinated personnel only. Unvaccinated still must wear a mask in those situations. All other rules are in place, such as notifying supervisors of if you're sick and the required quarantine and isolation procedures. That concludes my report. Pending your questions, President Howell and board, I'll pass it over to Carlos Mendoza. I did want to make one quick comment, though, on the homeless issue. Most of our homeless cleanups are not on our CCSD properties, but rather properties around town, the Pocket Park, areas of the ranch. And a lot of them now are essentially on state and county properties. And Carlos does a great, great effort on coordinating with those. And he just recently coordinated with the state Caltrans organization, who actually responded despite an order from the governor not to vacate people from state properties. So I'll let him go in a little bit more on that. But I just wanted to give a shout out to Carlos because he's done such a phenomenal job with the cleanup.
Thank you, Jim. Well, before we move to Mr. Mendoza's report, I see two hands from the board. So let's start with Director Steidel, followed by Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Howell. Jim Weigold, I was just curious, in the guidance received from CDPH, was there anything specifically in how to handle the process of defining whether someone was vaccinated or unvaccinated?
I'd have to defer to HR for that. We generally use the vaccination cards, though, for that guidance.
Okay. So, in other words, if someone cannot produce a vaccination card, they're assumed right. to be unvaccinated and therefore would be required to wear a mask?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Director Farmer, please.
Thank you, President Howell. I just wanted to follow up with regard to the EV charging station and the fact that, as General Manager Weigold mentioned, we're going to have to do the new design and get a permit for that. So I'm just wondering, with regard to the design and the permit, and therefore moving the charging station over, how long do we anticipate that taking place? And how much is it? Do we have any idea about the cost? And will we be making any type of budget adjustment as a result? Thank you.
Yes, Director Farmer, we've actually got this item on our, I'm checking right now, I think it's our first meeting in April to outline a lot of that process, where we are at that point, sort of an update and any costs and estimates at that point.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do we have any additional questions from the board? Seeing none, let's then move on to Mr. Mendoza for your portion of the report, please.
Good afternoon, board. President Howell, appreciate the opportunity, the time to provide a report for the Facilities and Resources Department. You have my report as part of the general manager's report, and if it's okay with you this time around, I'll go through it. If I could just share my screen and I'll be brief on the presentation that I provided for you. I'm not sure if you can see that on the screen there. Okay, fantastic. So one of the items that we have been working on for about a month and a half now is working on receiving quotes and bids to redo the roof behind the vet's hall. This is the roof on top of the American Legion's kitchen and dining area, which you can see on the screen there. It's right behind the barbecue area. And we've received all the bids. We have now contacted the winning contractor and are starting to set up a contract to get that work done. The budget for this work was included in this year's budget at $15,000. And so far the quotes have come in underneath that. So we're very hopeful that we'll be able to get that done on budget. I've talked to the American Legion a few months back, the commander, just letting them know that we were going to be working on this soon. And I actually talked to him a couple of weeks back on site and sort of walked him through the process of what the work was, how long it was going to take, and maybe some of the issues with their events that they have down there. So they're aware of that. And as we move forward, we'll keep them obviously in the loop on that work. Last month, I think I reported on the damage to a sign on the East Ranch. The Chamber of Commerce was able to hire a contractor and they were able to make those repairs early this month. So that sign is looking very good out there now. And also, as I reported last month, we applied for a permit to remove a number of trees on a CCSD-owned lot. These trees were diseased, leaning towards the homes, and we were able to work with the local contractor to get those removed. One of the tricky issues with this lot is it's on the weed abatement list, and so because it's on the weed abatement list, we have to make a little more of an effort to remove the vegetation from that lot. But fortunately, as we always try to do, we try to repurpose the trees and the material, and we were able to get those wood chips down to the dog park. And so there's now fresh wood chips down at the dog park. Another issue with the tree on the Fiscalini Ranch, this is on the entrance to the Tipton trailhead. We had a Monterey pine tree that uprooted and was leaning towards the home there at the entrance. So that was done in-house. We were able to take that tree down. And now there's a nice pile of wood chips there for our volunteers to be able to spread out in the coming weeks. And we have a really good partnership with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch. Obviously, they do a lot of invasive plant removal. We try to assist them as much as we can with their efforts. And so this is a collaborative effort of removing ice plant. They were able to pull 16 yards of ice plant from the bluff trail, and then we were able to load that up with our own equipment and get that hauled away. During the winter, we see some potholes, some ruts on the entrance to the community park and dog park. So that's one of the areas that we fixed last month, brought in some material, was able to lay that out, get that smooth out as well. And then finally, just wanted to provide you with a little bit of an update. During the winter, we had one of our street lights got run over by a vehicle. We weren't able to find who had run that over. But we have now ordered that street light. Our insurance is compensating us for that loss. So we're hoping about 3 months or so wait before we're able to get that street light installed. The other maintenance that we have been doing on street lights is during winter, we do an assessment of the street lights that we own on Main Street. We were able to find about 12 street lights that were non-functioning, whether it was light bulbs or cracked glass. And we had a contractor work for a couple of months coming in and out ordering parts. And so all of those street lights are now fully functional. So that's my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Mendoza. Any questions from the board? I see none. And I actually intended to call public comment before any of these reports. So at this point, does anybody on the public wish to make a comment regarding Mr. Mendoza's report? Seeing none, we'll move forward. So the next item will be our finance manager's report. So again, I'll call for public comment first. Do we have any public? Yes, I see some. So Osana, would you please bring in Yes. No, she took her hand down. One more last call for public comment on the finance manager's report. All right, seeing none, is there any written comment on the finance manager's report, Osana? None. Okay, thank you, Ms. Duffield. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, President Howell, members of the board. So again, this report is for the month of January. Fast forward to page 22 of the packet. So I put a recap on there about what is happening with anything with FEMA and also anything with state OES for our storm damage recovery. So we're actively working with state OES to get backup invoices and supporting documentation so that they can proceed with our project worksheets and get those approved. And then hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be able to really have an idea of what they're going to cover or not cover. Because at this point, you know, we've submitted them a lot of data, but we don't know at this point what is going to be accepted or not. So we're still waiting on that outcome. As far as Tyler goes, we were successful in configuring and using the program for both our 1099 reporting in January for all of our 1099-able accounts payable vendors, and then also getting out our W-2s to all of our paid staff. I'm going to be working with the project manager for Tyler we have transitioned to during the closeout phase of our implementation. And so we have scheduled some time within the next 2 weeks. I'm not sure of the exact date at this point to get the final data out of our MOMS, our old MOMS financial or legacy system. We had an initial data pull so that Tyler could make sure when they imported the data at go live that all that data could get into their system properly. It was formatted right. And so, you know, we had two different data pulls, one for the financial side and then a separate one for utility billing. So we do have a gap in time from when that happened to when we actually went live with the system. So what we're having the consultant come back and do is grab that group of time that was kind of missing. So once that is complete, I will be working with the Tyler program manager to go through the checklist that everything else that should be done and has been implemented so far. And then we'll proceed with the closeout of our implementation contract, which just means that we just go full into technical support for Tyler. That's kind of how we're operating now, unless we need any specialized training from them. But for the most part, if we have any hiccups with the system or any error messages that we don't know how to clear, we've been working with tech support. So you know, once that happens, I will provide, we'll have a final cost for all the invoices that have been paid because we've kind of done a pay as we go with the system. So I'll have a formal report to the board on, you know, we're officially closed and here's the final cost of, you know, the contract versus what happened in reality. So hopefully that'll be coming during the month of March, if not for sure in April. I think we should be closed out by then. And then as far as the audit goes, we're doing the final touches on everything. And I'm expecting a draft report from the auditor on March 4th or on or before that date. So hopefully in March or at least the first meeting in April, the board will get to hear the audit, you know, be received from the auditors themselves. And then we can check that off of our list. Other than that, that concludes my report and I'd be happy to answer questions that you may have.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Duffield. Board members, do we have some questions for Ms. Duffield? Seeing none, I do have one sort of question. Now that you're almost through with Tyler, it seemed like in one sense it's probably more, the initial process was somewhat painful. I, What is your feeling now? Is the time past when the pain is the pain over with, and you're now are you able to begin to see some of the benefits of the system at this point?
I think so. We're still learning. Like currently we have an error in the bank reconciliation process. I can't complete the December bank reconciliation for the main checking because we have a hard stop error that won't let me go through. So we're waiting on the Tyler analyst to fix that. So, you know, every time we do a process, you know, if some little light bulb goes off, you know, we still have to learn what that means and how to fix it. You know, and the more time that we have in the system as time goes by, you know, we're seeing that, you know, certain things are way more efficient than our old system, but then other processes we have require 3 or 4 or 5 more steps to get that same process done. So, you know, we're all still, I think, in the learning mode. You know, because they're still, you know, like the work orders. We haven't fully rolled out the work orders yet. You know, there's things in project accounting that we haven't rolled out yet. That'll take some time for us to figure out how to put that into our business practices and what makes sense and what's just going to cause everybody a lot of time but not give us any benefit. And then utility billing, I think there's a lot of things that we could roll out, but I don't think it makes sense to do those things until we have our meters replaced. You know, I think it just makes more sense to wait on some of the functions of utility billing. Like for instance, we can have a portal set up where every customer creates a login. They can look at their utility bill and they can look at their real-time usage. But without having our meters match that process, all they can do, all they would be able to do at this time would be able to view their bill. So, you know, we've kind of put a hold on rolling that out until the full function of that, you know, option, you know, can be out there for everybody. So it's just things like that, you know, it's gonna take time. You know, to get everything out there, you know, a couple of years. This first year is just, we just have to figure it out. You know, we've gotten over the deer in the headlight look. So, you know, we've gotten past that. But I mean, there's still many things that, you know, we still, I'm sure, have to learn with the system. It's very powerful.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Duffield. Yeah, it sounds a bit of a mixed bag, you know, but at least it looks to me like you're retaining your sense of humor. So
some days.
Okay. Okay. Director Steidel.
Thank you, President Howe. I just wanted to make a comment. There may be folks who, not having gone through the conversion of in a business environment of one system from a way you're doing business to a new way, there are basically two ways to do it. Either you can tailor what you're purchasing and make it align to the way you're already doing business, which means you create a basically a standalone system that takes a whole lot of money to support. Or you can be smart and you can align your business practices to what the software offers you. And I just wanted to say that Ms. Duffield was very much aware of that in this process. And some of what we're seeing is the need now to make some of those business practice alignments to the system. And it does take some time and it does take some decision-making and it does take some need to truly understand how the system is working for you, but it was the smartest decision, hands down. Having seen things done the other way, it isn't pretty. So my kudos to Ms. Duffield for taking that approach. I think it's in the best interest of the district.
Thank you, Director Steidel. And I certainly must concur. You know, any software implementation is a bit of a challenge under the best of circumstances. So Good job, I think. let's see, I think anybody else, anything more for Ms. Duffield? All right, let us then move forward to the next section, which is the utilities report. Again, I'll call for public comment first, give people a chance to ask questions. I see two right now, so that'll be Dr. Bettenhausen, followed by Christine Heinrichs. So please bring Ms. Bettenhausen in, Osana. Welcome, Ms. Bettenhausen. I see you're here.
Thank you. I was hitting unmute, but it didn't believe me. Thank you very much, President Howell. And just parenthetically, I want to thank you very much for just posing your question to Finance Manager Duffield. I found her description extremely enlightening. And there are too few occasions I've found in the past in meetings for that to happen from a manager from the staff. So I thank you very much. And I thank Ms. Duffield, Manager Duffield, for a very, very helpful explanation of what it's like to live with a Tyler N code. I want simply to make one comment about the pending utilities report. I have sent you right before the meeting. I was occupied with something else this morning to do it sooner, but I sent you a wonderful article in today's Tribune about accessory dwelling units and the decision that was made by the Coastal Commission. And Mackenzie Schumann has written, as she always does, an excellent article in the Tribune about environmental issues. I draw your attention to that because in your agenda for today on page 26 is the question of the issuing of a will serve to 528 Plymouth, which is just up the street from where I live. And apparently it was already issued by the CCSD. And I hope that you will put on your agenda or that Mr. Manager D'Enzo, you will put on your future reports exactly how the concerns raised by the Coastal Commission forbidding Cambria and Los Osos for doing this, for adding accessory dwelling units, however defined, put that on the agenda and discuss how exactly then the Coastal Commission's decision just recently made will fit into the CCSD continuing to issue will serves that come under the rubric of accessory housing for a particular lot. Thank you. I urge all people in town, in fact, to read that article in the Tribune today. It is another exquisite example of how a woman writing with utter clarity and utter comprehension. I'm exceeding jealous of this woman at the Tribune. She's excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. So, Osana, please bring in Ms. Heinrichs. Welcome, Ms. Heinrichs.
Okay, thank you, President Howell. I'd like to draw your attention to that same item, apparently approved by Mr. D'Enzo, for a two-story, independent-standing, detached garage and guest house at 528 Plymouth. While this particular permit has expired, I ask you to direct General Manager Weigold to direct Utility Manager D'Enzo not to approve this permit in future. As you know, the Coastal Commission and the county have acted to prohibit accessory dwelling units in Cambria due to lack of adequate water, even for current residents. As the commission wrote and the county accepted, quote, even existing water extractions to serve existing development has led to coastal resource degradation. For example, groundwater overdraft, seawater intrusion, fishery impacts, ESHA degradation, etc. And both communities, that's Los Osos and Cambria, continue to be designated a level of severity 3 under the LCP in terms of water supply. Due to these problems, the LCP currently does not generally allow for new residential units within these communities because there is a lack of sustainable water to serve them, and the provision of additional water would lead to significant coastal resource impacts, end quote. So this would not be allowed. Please direct him not to approve this permit. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Do we have anybody else out there in the public wishing to speak? Give you just a minute. All right, seeing none. And Osana, do we have any written commentary regarding the utilities report? Okay. Thank you, Osana. So, Mr. D'Enzo, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you, President Howell. I'm going to be presenting the utilities report for activities that have taken place in January of this year. Feels like a whole year has gone by already. But I'll go ahead and start from the top. I want to highlight some of the items. There's a lot of things in the utilities report, but I just want to highlight some things that I want to bring to your attention. For example, in the wastewater plant, I want to let you all know about the innovation that John Alchin came up with regarding the use of polymer in our secondary clarifiers that's mentioned in the first paragraph. This is an interesting innovation because it's actually, you know, pretty brilliant. And it was a collaboration that an idea from other wastewater operators in the area. Specifically for us, it's something that addresses more high flow situations where, you know, typically when you have solids that overtop the clarifier and it would start to, you know, affect the turbidity of the effluent going out. So this is a pretty good innovation, and John is going to be formalizing it. It was kind of an experiment, but it looks like we're going to be implementing it permanently for our system. Moving on to the wastewater collection system, just want to bring to mind that now that our collection system guys are doing more maintenance, more a systematic inspection of our collection system, we are finding more spider roots, what's called spider roots, that are forming in our sewer collection system. These are very difficult to deal with. They kind of get in there, and we don't have a really good way of dealing with it. Like we don't have a little weed whacker attachment on our camera. It would be cool if we did, but we don't have something like that. Typically, like we would mitigate for it, and with flushing as best as we can. Worst case scenario, we would have to replace a section of the pipe. We've had to do that in the recent past, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention because we also are starting to see these in the sewer laterals. Anyway, just wanted to bring that to your attention. Also, another good way that we're in our collection system, I alluded to this in the recent past where we discovered a new way. It's an expandable epoxy to deal with sealing the manholes that are leaking, way to put it, you know, it also not even leaking out. It's like water coming into the manhole, and it makes its way into our wastewater treatment plant. And sealing these joints is a very expensive proposition, but we found a good method for this. And you can see there in Figure B of the utilities report, Tony dressed up in a bunny suit there. To seal these cracks in our manholes. The good thing about this is normally fixing these problems would cost upwards of $10,000 per manhole, but we're able to reduce that to about $750 per manhole. The experiment worked well in the last few months, so we're going to be implementing that a little bit more system-wide. Now, moving on to the water department, yes, the emergency bypass is complete. The final cost has not been tallied yet. Our contractor that did the work is getting the final invoices. The actual work from the contractor portion is actually in the neighborhood of $350,000. But there's also other costs like the environmental monitoring that we needed to do, which would also be additional costs. So final tally would probably be closer to what General Weigold said be around $400,000. But I will be getting more details for that once all the invoices come in. Also, I want to highlight that a new fire hydrant was installed there in the San Simeon park near the entrance. And this is a result of an after action activity that was identified when there was a fire in the Washburn campground. There was no fire hydrant nearby that our fire department could access. So as a result of that and after actions that ensued, we were able to work with the state parks to install a fire hydrant in the alternate entrance of the park. It's not normally accessible to the public, although it is accessible to staff. Really good improvement there for the San Simeon campground for a system. I also want, a lot of you are curious about our water meters, the challenges that we're experiencing right now with the details is trying to get the infrastructure to match our terrain. We are working with different vendors with that. So once those details are ironed out, we can move on more closely to the financing of that system. Also, I want to let you know. So there's a table there of all the activities that the water staff has done. If you have any questions about that, I can answer to that. But anyway, it's summarized there. Regarding the water reclamation facility, nothing out of the ordinary, just routine maintenance, flushing and disinfection of the underground pipes, and the air compressor was serviced. Moving on to our water supply and demand, I want to note that there was 3.62 acre feet less production compared with last year at this time. So again, this is a carryover of good water conservation habits from our community. And I also want to let you all know that that we did do I don't want to say an overhaul, but we edited our master diversion and production workbook. This workbook tracks all the daily and monthly and annual water withdrawals in our system. And I'm just bringing this to your attention because we wanted to separate out certain things like the diversions, for example, to the riparian users. We wanted to separate that out. And the point here is that there are different state agencies, three of them of note, that use a lot of this data, but they don't use the same data. And we have to report these things every year. So we just basically tailored the master diversion and production report to accommodate all of those different fields that we need to populate when we generate these reports. So if anyone looks more closely at it, you will notice the difference. But that's the reason why, is because we wanted to tailor it more for these different annual reports that we submit to the state. And our water, as far as the well data and all of those are concerned, it's trending somewhat normal. We have to understand that the way our aquifer is, the well levels are pretty dynamic, especially around this time. Even with a dry January, it dropped a little bit, some of the metrics. But I believe that, depending on, if we are to get more rains this season, it should stabilize a little bit more. But understand that we are, in that situation where some of these things you know, there are going to be minor adjustments due to just the way our aquifers are. With that, I think that's the end of my report. And if you're, again, if there was something that I didn't explain, and if you have a curiosity about, I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. D'Anzo. Very interesting report indeed. So I see Director Gray has his hand up. Director Gray.
Thank you, President Howell. That was a great report and very thorough. Mr. D'Anzo, I wanted just to a couple questions, actually. One of them is on that changeover or the change in the way the production and diversion totals are reported to the various agencies. Does that have any effect on the data we get every month on production, the monthly data, for instance? And also, you know, that's one question. That's just hopefully a short one. Also, is it possible to give a short update on the CDP process and where that is?
Sure. Okay. Yeah. To answer the first question, it shouldn't change anything with that. You know, we just made it. We just added some more detail. We just added some more columns to that report. Is all we did. And as far as the CDP, I didn't include that in this report because there really isn't much to talk about other than, and you know, as GM Weigel mentioned, you know, in March the 10th, we will be presenting the Adaptive Management Annual Report, where we will include the results of the in-stream flow study for that's related to task two activities. As far as the task one activities are concerned, we are using that, you know, that data is, I should say not data, field work is underway with that. And all of these will inform the AMP. Saying all of this because all of these will feed into the final portion of the CDP permit. And mainly the task two activities that will be presented in March the 10th. And the county did grant us some more time, because once we get, once the board approves the update to the AMP, we will submit those results to those agencies to get their preliminary concurrence on the AMP, which is the last item that we will present to the county to complete the permit information hold. So yes, that's kind of where we're at on the AMP. How long that will take from this point, what's really difficult to, and I'll mention this in March 10th, what's difficult to know at this point is how long we will get a response, you know, how much time that those agencies will respond to give us a preliminary concurrence. But I anticipate that we will get that within a couple of months of us submitting that request. So anyway, long answer, but I hope that covers it. So
one more short question for clarification. Task one data, that is not a requirement, or that's not something that the county has required to complete the permit, right? It's sort of
that wasn't the intent of that.
Parallel, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Vice President Dean, you have a question.
Director Gray's last question was exactly what I was going to ask. So thank you. I wanted to know if task one results were needed for the county to complete the CDP. So I believe that got answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Director Farmer, your question.
Thank you, President Howell. Not so much a question. Well, actually, a question and a comment. First, I want to thank him and his staff for finding less expensive ways of dealing with problems around manhole covers and being able to address them in a much more economically efficient way. Ray, over here in our area on Lodge Hill, it may be happening in other parts of town as well. Cal Portland has been coming by and covering the streets which is a good thing, not nearly as many potholes and et cetera. However, I noticed that as a result, Cal Portland and our water staff are having to go around, and sewer, I would imagine, having to go around and do that jackhammering and replacing the covers. And so as a result, I'm wondering how much time is demanded, how problematic is that for us to either, you know, replace or repair the manhole covers? And then I have another comment as well.
Hey, Mr. D'Anzo, would you be so good as to have an answer for Director Farmer?
Yes, the manhole covers and actually also the valve boxes are, that effort has begun now of raising them to grade. And reports from both John Alchin and Jim Green have said that the work has been fantastic. It's they're doing a really good job of doing that. We've taken the opportunity to provide new manholes in some areas that require new manholes. That's John Alchin gave me an estimate of about a month and a half for this work to be completed for the utility box raising for both manholes and valve boxes.
Thank you, Mr. D'Anzo. Director Farmer, you said you had one final question.
A couple of quick things. First, and I understand, Ray mentioned that well levels are trending average, and I can see that if I were looking at graph on page 28, that it would appear that way. But in looking on page 29, where it has the results of the past 10 years with regard to well levels, and I think Ray kind of alluded to this briefly, that the well levels actually have dropped down a little bit in January, which is highly unusual. It's not really that noticeable in any of the previous 10 years. And so I just wanted to bring that to the attention of those of us that reside here in Cambria, that we already are being a bit challenged with regard to water availability. I think we all know that. I don't necessarily need to be saying that, because the number one conversation in town is, gee, we haven't been getting any rain lately. So I know people are aware and they're still remaining vigilant with regard to their water usage, but I just wanted to point that out, like I say, on page 29, the yellow line. And then finally, a couple of things on page 26, and this was mentioned by one of the people in public comment with regard to the will serve on Plymouth. I guess where it says detached addition, I didn't even know, well, what does a detached addition mean, other than it's not part of the house? It would be good to know that a detached addition means a potential dwelling unit. So that would be nice to have that clarification. And also at the top of page 27, where it says a vacation rental will serve on Lag Drive. I've lived here for 35 years and I don't know of any street with that name in town, L-A-G-E, Lag Drive. So that might be just a typo of some type. So I just wanted to draw somebody's attention to that. Thank you.
Interesting. Thank you, Director Farmer. Director Steidel, I believe you had a question or observation.
Oops. I did. I'm going to find the right thing to click. Director Farmer touched on this. I just wanted to say, I mean, there wasn't a lot of time that was spent on that, but in the initial information, but the modifications that the utility staff continually look to implement in the way that the district runs its utilities to make things as efficient and safe for us, kudos to them. And please communicate the thanks from the board that the work that they do takes care of all of us, and their ingenuity and their desire to look for solutions that make a difference really are very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Steidel. Vice President Dean.
I want to echo what Director Steidel just said. We have a great group of people working for our district, and they're very creative in ways to save us money and to solve problems. And we've got a great leader of that group of people in Mr. D'Anzo. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Dean. Any additional comments? I have just a brief couple of them. First of all, Mr. D'Anzo, I'd like to echo the sentiments of our, my fellow board members. We really do appreciate all the work that goes into keeping us with water and keeping our sewage where it belongs to be. It is the kind of thing that when everything works well, nobody notices it. So it's really. What I would like to, in your report, I got this feeling, and I just wanted to call it out because it's kind of impressive. There seems to be a sense of creativity and innovation. There seems to be sort of some kind of a ferment or some kind of bubbling going on over there. So everybody seems to be working kind of a little bit out of the box and creatively. So whatever you're doing is probably the right thing because we're getting really good results. So thank you so much for that. I do have one question, however, on your on page 25, down at the bottom, the diagram that shows the water stages. And I'm just kind of wondering, because it looks like except for the gradient, everything else is either stage two or higher. So could you comment a little bit about your take on all this and where we, and is it time to go to a stage two? Okay.
Thank you, Director, President Howell. I was prepared to answer this question because if you look at the data, we collect data twice a month, one on the 1st and then one on the 15th. And obviously there's no time to put that onto this utilities report, but on the website it is presented on the website. And so for instance, on page 25, SR4 is at 49.34, February 15th, which is, you know, a couple of days ago, it's now at 53.58.
Wow, okay.
And then WBE, it says they're 5.08, it's now at 5.9, which is a stage one equivalent. And by the way, that 53.58 would be like upper two, close to one. But and then WBW, the Windsor Bridge West, said page 25 is 4.43. It's actually at 5.63, which is also a one. And the gradient also went up in February, which, you know, used to be 2.8 on page 25, which was on the 1st. It's now at 3.06. The thing, though, that was to be expected is that the San Simeon wells did go down a touch. So 19.43 is on page 25, but on the 15th, it's at 19.19, which is still in the 2 range. And that was to be expected because we started pumping again in that area in the San Simeon wells. So a lot of the January reporting too, there was some influence of Santa Rosa being used more because of the water main break. So, like I said. These metrics, you know, some mean more than others. For example, to me, like right now at this point, SR4 doesn't mean much to me. Well, before anyone quotes me on that, it's not as high a priority as, say, the gradient. The gradient to me is something I pay attention to, and of course the San Simeon wells. I do pay attention to those more than some of the other metrics. So, but, you know, if there is going to be a change, you know, if we see like a trend to go to two, for example, we will present that to you next month if it were the case. But at this point, I think that, you know, we're still in the middle of the rainy season. There's no need to be reactive, I should say, for this. And I think that the good people of Cambria are still doing good water conservation practices. So I think we're still in the appropriate stage for where we're at.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, and I see that Vice President Dean also has an additional comment.
So in the past, we had been alternating the use between Santa Rosa Wells and San Simeon Wells, so San Simeon Wells could rest a bit. But am I correct that we're not using Santa Rosa at all at the current time? And that it is to be expected that San Simeon go down a little bit if we are exclusively using those wells. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your report. Just to finish off as a message to all who are listening or who might listen later, is that though we are in a stage one, we really wish to encourage people to continue their habits of conservation, because the time may come when we will need that. And so we shouldn't just pull out all stops and start wasting water willy-nilly just because we have it. We need to keep those habits so that they will be with us when we need them. Moving right along then, I think we're now ready for the consent agenda. And I'm going to handle this. It's a large agenda, and I want to remind people a couple of things about the consent agenda before we go forward as to the procedure here. So let me read a couple of paragraphs from our own bylaws, because this is something that we kind of forget about from time to time. So while an item is on consent, a board member, I'm paraphrasing a bit here, a board member may ask a minor question for clarification on any item on the consent agenda. So the item may be discussed for clarification and questions can be addressed, while the item is still on the consent agenda. We don't have to pull it, in other words, in order to comment about it. The other thing is, this is also in the bylaws, when a board member wishes to pull an item just to register a dissenting vote, you don't really need to do that. What you can do is you inform the presiding officer that you wish to register a dissenting vote without discussion, and then that will, then we handle the item as part of the consent agenda, and the board secretary will register a no vote on that item for that director in the minutes. So if in other words, if we don't need to pull an item in order to talk about it, and you don't need to pull an item just because you particularly don't approve of it, so you only need to pull an item if you feel that it needs to be debated. So if you're against something on there and you think you have a good chance of convincing a board majority, then yes, you would want to pull the item. But if you just want to object to it, for your own personal reasons, or, I mean, they could be very good reasons, or then you can certainly vote against it that way. So having said that, so the order of business will be, first of all, to ask board members whether you wish to have anything pulled. Following that, we will have questions or comments from the board on any items that are still on the consent agenda that haven't been pulled. And then we will follow that with public comment on the items that are still on consent. So let us begin then with, does anybody have any item that they would wish to pull? All right, nobody's jumping forth on that. All right. So do we have any comments or questions about any of the consent items? Is everyone happy with that? I see. Oh, yes, Director Farmer, sorry, I missed your hand.
It's not a problem. There's two of them now. I just want to... I just want to mention with regard to 7D and remote teleconferencing, and I believe Director Gray has brought this up recently with regard to going back to doing board meetings at the Vets Hall and standing committee meetings as well. And so I think maybe I can make that as a future agenda item, but I think that's something that we should discuss. and determine, well, do we actually, Mr. Lloyd from AGP talked about the fact that many other agencies are already stating that they're going to move in that direction. And I think we should be discussing that as well and see if, in fact, it's the environmentally correct direction to move in, going back to live meetings versus continuing to do meetings by remote on Zoom. So I think we ought to, that we should discuss that. I just wanted to bring that up since it is a consent, kind of a consent agenda item, and it should be discussed more. I've said enough. Thank you.
Oh, that's good. You're doing exactly the right thing. Okay. Mr. Carmel, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on Director Farmer's comments. AB 361, which is the amendment to the Brown Act that permits Zooming, it sunsets on March 31st. So the two meetings in April will be live meetings or hybrid meetings, whatever the board chooses.
Okay.
There's still the conventional method the Brown Act allows for teleconferencing for a board member. So that's available, but full-on Zooming is going to be, unless they extend it, which is possible, depending on, you know, the metrics as we move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Carmel. And yes, Director Farmer, so that clearly we will have to bring that forward for some discussion as to how we want to proceed. Any other board member comments, questions regarding the consent agenda? Let's see. Mr. Carmel, your hand is still up. Okay. All right. So then let's move on to public comments. So folks out there in the public, do you have any? I see one. I'll give it a minute, let other people. I wish you guys, if you want to talk, you would all raise your hand so I'd get some sense as to how long this is going to take. But I see Ms. Heinrichs has her hand up. So Osana, would you please bring her in? Welcome, Ms. Heinrichs.
There, thank you. Just a brief comment on item 7I, the meeting time change from 2 p.m. to 1 p.m. I hope this change has the desired results. Work tends to expand to fill the time available. So personally, I expect the meetings will continue to occupy the full afternoon as scheduled. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. That's always a question. But there's no harm in trying. Let's see if we can. All right. Anybody else? I see nobody else out there in the audience wishing to speak. So I think we are ready for a motion to approve the consent agenda. Do I hear a motion from anybody? Yes, Director Steidel.
I move that the consent item 7A through and inclusive of 7I be passed.
Okay, and Director Gray, you had your hand up first there. I'm reading your lips on that. It looked like you were seconding it.
I second the motion.
Okay, very good. So second, moved by Director Steidel and seconded by Director Gray to adopt a to pass the items on the consent agenda. We don't debate the consent agenda, so we're ready for the question here. So Osana, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Director Steidel, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Steidel, aye. Director Gray?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer, aye. Vice President Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Dean, aye. And President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, President Howell. Aye. 5 ayes unanimously to approve the consent agenda items 7A through 7I. Thank you.
Thank you, Osana. So we're now ready for regular business. And as we discussed, we'll deal with item 8C first, which is the presentation update by Bartle Wells Associates regarding the PG&E IGA financing and the rate study. For this, I think we need to bring Mr. Handler in. Osana, you probably need to bring him in as a panelist. Probably is, okay. And I think what we'll do before we begin, Mr. Handlers, let's hear from you first before we take public comment, I think. So the floor is yours, Mr. Handlers.
Sure. Thank you. Nice to see everybody again. And there's really not a lot of action that we're bringing to the board today. It's more just a little background information. And we want to get the board's direction, no formal action, but direction on where to go from here with the rate study to keep it moving along. And there is a presentation that I think the district, John, was kindly going to share for me, because sometimes when I share it from afar, it doesn't seem to work. So just wanted to make sure. There we go. Oh, great. Thank you, John.
Are you seeing the screen now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So next slide. You know, for this presentation, again, I just have a kind of a real brief background and just wanted to give a little, you know, observations on what we see as some of the challenges with your water reclamation facility and sewer finances and kind of what the rates are looking like, understanding it's still preliminary, and again, get the board's direction for, you know, where do we go from here with the rate study. And on the next slide, a little bit of background to the next slide. Thank you. Again, just reminding everybody that the utilities are self-supporting enterprises. I know nobody likes rate increases, but the rates really are the underpinnings, not only of your finances, but they also underlie the financial, the operational stewardship of how you run and maintain your facilities. So every agency needs rate increases. Historically, I know before I started working there, there's about 20 years of no rate increases. But the board did approve rate increases over the last, you know, 5 years or so, which has substantially strengthened the financial positions of your water and sewer enterprises, which is great. However, they are facing some, you know, substantial capital needs. So ongoing rate increases will be needed from my perspective. On to the next slide is, again, the summary, the survey of regional water and sewer rates. I made some changes to this slide. I made sure it was updated for all the latest rates. And also from what we saw from the water use data is that most single family homes are averaging about 6.5 hundred cubic feet of water use per bi-monthly billing period. So about 3.2500 cubic feet per month. So that's what I based the survey on. Not everyone uses that amount. Some use less and some use more, but generally when you're dealing with an average, because there are some higher users, the typical user, you know, maybe about, you know, 2/3 of folks out there are probably using less than this level per month on average in a given year. So your rates are higher than they were 5 years ago, but they're still relatively look quite reasonable compared to the surrounding communities out there. You're not the lowest, but you're certainly nowhere near the highest. On to the next slide is again the history of water use, where you can see on the left side of the blue bars there are showing what the annual water use is. You know, before that drought in 2013 onwards, use used to be quite a lot higher. During the drought, your community did an incredible job conserving water. They almost cut water use in half, and you needed to. And since then, you know, we always expected the water use would bounce back, and it did, but we never assumed it would go back to the pre-drought levels. And you can see there on the chart, I show kind of what the new norm is, about 205,000 units used per year. During COVID, you actually saw a little bit of an uptick last year, maybe more folks from vacation homes, more people working from home. And we've seen this with some other communities where there's like a substantial tourism industry, where those areas in California saw things didn't slow down, they boomed. But anyway, so far this year, we're seeing water use is actually been about 10% lower than it has been last year. And you know, that's partly, I think, because of the stage five water emergency. But I understand that's been declared over. So that last bar is just a preliminary estimate. You'll probably end up a little bit lower than recent years, but not significantly lower. Moving on, so that's the background. On the next slide, goes to the water finance overview. I kind of compared where things are coming in to compared the projections we made during the last rate study. When you do these rate studies, you put your best foot forward. You never have perfect information. We never know what's exactly going to happen with future water use or future operating costs or capital needs. But overall, the revenues and expenses were generally on track with prior projections. I think that's also partly due to the district keeping its expenses in line with what it looked like the revenues would be from the prior rate study. So you've done a good job with that. When we look at the financial challenges in the big picture, the main thing is on the capital side we see for the various enterprises. You've got a lot of aging infrastructure in a coastal climate with, you know, salt water, air. Things don't last as long as they might in the middle of the desert. And some of the challenges you're facing are, there was talk earlier about the water meter replacement program. That's a program that would probably cost, you know, we're hearing the 1.5 upward range. In our draft projections, I assumed you'd finance that with a 15-year meter lease with costs of about $150,000 a year. You had a break in a major water transmission main. The emergency repair alone was a few hundred, $400,000, somewhere in that range. And the cost estimates for pipeline replacement are, it's preliminary, but you know, very well could be $1 million or more. Also, on the water side, I wanted to mention, you've got an old loan from the general fund. I know there's been focus on aggressively paying off the sewer fund loan that the general fund gave to the sewer fund to make sure it could pay its bills a few years back. But you do have a loan on the water side that I think is over 10 years old now. It was $158,000, so not as much as the sewer side, but the recommendation is just get that thing paid off and off your books in upcoming years. And then always your enterprises are dealing with ongoing cost inflation for all items, staffing, insurance, utilities, supplies, everything. The costs tend to rise over time. So that means that, you know, even if everything was perfect, small rate increases would be needed each year just to tread water and stay on top of everything. So the general recommendation is getting back on track with the annual rate increases. You previously started doing that with a prior rate study. I know you and many other agencies out there kind of stopped doing that with COVID, but you need to get back on track. And the more things are delayed, the steeper the flight path for getting back to where you need to go. The preliminary projections that we put together look like the water rate increases would be in kind of the mid single digit rate increase level, which I thought was good for a few years. And the way we approach these rate studies is, you know, look long term, get the rates aiming in the right direction, and then reassess a few years later, and you can adjust course as needed. But we don't know what the final will be yet. There's still some outstanding data. The audit's not complete. We want to make sure we have all the latest, greatest for the capital and the budgets and everything else. But I think we have a good sense of where it looks like things are going. On to the next slide, sewer, a lot of the similar, water reclamation facility, which is now, I guess, the preferred term of use, although I know no one's happy with any of the terms that have been put out there so far. Currently, that's only permitted for emergency use. And I understand the district seeking kind of a new permit from the Coastal Commission, which may require, you know, certain upgrades be made to that facility to meet the permit requirements. Good news is you did receive a $1.75 million settlement funds for the design, I guess, of the water reclamation facility. I think that was related largely to the ponds, which is nice, but at the same time, due to the ponds, you do have some substantial funding needs there. and maybe some other capital needs related to the water reclamation facility, you know, could be things like surface water treatment, brine handling, other modifications that might be needed to meet the permit requirements. The details of all these costs are not yet determined, but what I'm hearing is that the near-term funding needs could be in the range of $1 to $2 million or more, depending on what's being done, particularly to the ponds. So the anticipation is that those settlement funds would be kind of held aside and used to help fund those capital needs. The other thing I'm just mentioning is that in the prior projections, when for the water reclamation facility rates, there were some estimates in there about what it costs for brine handling and disposal. And my understanding is that really those costs are a lot higher. So this facility, at least as currently envisioned, would cost more to run if ran for an emergency, because the cost for hauling and disposal would be a lot higher. So our recommendation for the water reclamation facility, again, this is preliminary. I think it needs more vetting from the district, is that it looks like you can hold the line on those rates for now. And maybe after some of these capital needs are determined with a little more detail, you can come back and reevaluate if any additional increases are needed. But right now, I think holding the line looks like it would be fine. And onto the final slide about the utilities is the sewer finances. There, your sewer fund, just to remind everyone, there are zero fund reserves, no fund reserves on your sewer side, which is not good. Normally, you want your utilities to have some fund reserves. So in case of a revenue shortfall or some unanticipated expense, you'd have a little pot of cash that you can draw from. Now, the reason why there's no sewer funds is because you've been aggressively paying off the general fund loan as quickly as possible. And that's great because in reality, your general fund acts as a backstop if there ever was some financing need on the sewer side and you had no funds in the bank. However, you know, that's something, I know that's been the policy to focus on the sewer fund loan repayment, but that's something my general recommendation would be to, instead of draining down the sewer funds again, even though that's the current policy, defer that so you at least keep a little something in the bank and build that into the financial and rate projections so you may be paid off for the next 5 years. I know there's no action being taken on that today, but just mentioning it. On the sewer side, that's really where a lot of major capital needs are. You had the PG&E's Sustainable Solutions Turnkey SST program. And out of that came the investment grade assessment or investment grade report, the IGA, as it's referred to. And that initially identified a very much more substantial level of funding needs that really is going to have to happen at some point to your wastewater treatment plant and collection system. So those projects were really prioritized and scaled back to really hone in on what are the highest priority needs. And, you know, without any cost updates, what's been looking at been looked at is that the, you know, there needs to be about $7.5 million, possibly more, for the wastewater treatment plant. And you've got some aging lift stations that've got some operational deficiencies, the way they're set up and pipelines and things. So we're looking at about $12 million of near-term funding needs with no money in the bank. Obviously, those would have to be financed with debt. So we've been assuming that they'd be financed with like 30-year bonds at this stage. Again, you've got a lot of aging facilities. And as I mentioned, we recommend repaying that general fund loan over the next 5 years over time without fully draining down the reserves each year. So you do need rate increases on the sewer side, a little more substantial than the water side, but it's not double-digit rate increases needed year after year. What we're currently looking at in the draft projections, again, preliminary, is for upper single-digit rate increases and then coming back to the board with some final recommendations and upcoming meeting as soon as that can happen. On the next slide, just to finalize things up here, we are looking for board direction, and we thought it was good to come back to get the board input in this. I know there's talk of going back to the district's finance committee first and vetting everything through that process. So that would be fine. Just to remind folks, it does take a little time to go through the Prop 218 process also. So if we were to come back to the Finance Committee, eventually come back to the board, go through the 218 process, it's going to take a little time before you can get new rates adopted. And as it stands, you wouldn't be able to do any financing until you at least had the rates in place to secure the financing. So as we mentioned in the last meeting, you could move forward on a parallel track. So when the rates were adopted, you'd be ready to move forward with the financing, but you know, leave that up to the board discretion. And that's not something you need to decide on at this moment in time. So please, any input on the direction of what the board would like to see to keep the rate study moving forward would be appreciated. And I'll end it there, turn it back over to the board. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Handler. So let's see. Well, let's start with questions from the board for clarification, followed by public comment, and then come back to the board for to provide Mr. Handler with the input that he needs to move forward. So this is questions for clarification, and I saw Director Steidel. Yes, your hand is up.
I just wanted to confirm over what time these suggested rates are being made. Are we talking about a 3-year period, a 5-year period, a 10-year period? Is it a higher, is it somewhat front-loaded, dropping down and then reaching a sustaining rate that, you know, reflects keeping up with inflation and those kinds of things? A better feel for what that represents.
Yeah. Good. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I allowed to answer?
You are, but let me call. So answer that, yes. Please go ahead.
Sorry for the breach of protocol. good question. You know, what I've been assuming, and again, we're going to be vetting this with the Finance Committee as well before coming back to the board. I've been assuming kind of a 3-year phase-in of rates to, you know, get them where they need to be, and afterwards, it's looking like it's, you know, more inflationary after a few years. So kind of elevate the rates over 3 years where they need to go, and then something more akin to, you know, treading water to keep everything in line. Okay. That's preliminary. Yeah.
Thanks, Director Gray.
No, thank you, President Howell. Mr. Hammers, I had a question kind of related to the one Director Steidel had about inflation. You just said, it sort of answered some of the question, like what role does the inflation adjustment play in this process? The timing, though, I wonder about, do we have those rates that you project, the 3-year increases that you project, followed by it's like an indexing or something for inflation, or is there some indexing for inflation on top of those rates that you project in the cards?
Good question. Yeah, it's the inflation is included in the 3-year rate projection I talk about. And part of that is in the financial projections, we're assuming that, you know, the operating costs are escalating each year a little bit. And after those 3 years, then it looks like in today's projections, it would be kind of inflationary rate increases after the rates were raised to a level to okay. a point. So it's not in it. The inflation is not in addition to the 3-year, you know, single-digit increases that I talked about.
Thank you. Director Steidel, I think your hand is still up. Did you have another
question? Yeah, I apologize for that. I will get that down. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, let's see. And Director Gray, your hand, is that a new question?
Just a follow-up, a short follow-up on inflation. What is the best way or the legal way to do, you know, an inflation protection rate? Is it an index? And if it is an index, how long can it stay in effect before you have to trigger the 218 process again?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Handlers, please go ahead.
Yeah, we're not, you know, so the rates that we're recommending are just, that I think are going to come back are just, hey, these are the recommended rates for the next 3 years, end of story, or they're the maximum rates, end of story. Sometimes what agencies do, there is part of the government code that was added a few years ago that allows agencies to do inflationary increases in a Prop 218 process. We weren't planning on using that, part of the government code in this, but I do have some other agencies that, you know, once they get their rates to a sustainable level, they still want to keep some kind of rates moving forward. So they've got some inflationary formula that's noticed to everybody. And then they could, you know, elevate rates as needed based on that inflationary formula. But typically, I don't find these formulas really tie into what water and sewer agencies are facing. For example, another agency I use, they use, you know, they can raise rates each year by CPI plus 2%. So they give themselves a little leeway. But that's really not, at least we could talk about those options with the finance committee and come back to the board. But as my current thoughts are, you know, you need rate increases. You're not there with us just doing this inflationary thing. So we'd recommend just, you know, adopting maximum rate increases most likely for a few years. Again, preliminary, everything I'm saying is preliminary. It hasn't been fully vetted through the whole, you know, district and committee process.
Thank you. Yes, Director, Vice President Dean.
So to tie on with what Director Gray said, so in order to continue on past this three-year rate increase period, if we wanted to do CPI increases to keep up with inflation, we'd have to do another Prop 218. Is that correct?
Yeah, Mr. Handler.
Yes, unless you wanted to add that, say, hey, we're going to do this for 3 years plus 2 years. You're allowed to do these inflationary increases for up to 5 years. Then you have to renotice. So if it was a three-year rate increase and you wanted to add in this ability to do these inflationary rate increases for 2 years after that, that's an option where it could come into place. But, you know, generally, my initial thoughts are, you know, although that's an option, I think it'd be, well, that's an option. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Okay. And one more thing. So you say you're assuming that the wastewater projects would be financed with long-term debt as 30-year bonds. I'm not quite sure what you're talking about with 30-year bonds. Is that's not bonds going on property taxes? That's investment bonds. Is that what it is? I don't understand. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Handler.
This is just a common financing mechanism. It's like, you know, instead of getting a loan, what a lot of public agencies do is issue bonds. This is something, it's just like a loan that the district would take on and would have to pay back over 30 years. So you'd borrow, it's a borrowing, $12 million or whatever the number is that you'd have to repay over time. So, I mean, you can't afford $12 million up front. So you'd pay that back over time through annual debt service payments.
Okay.
Thank you. Director Farmer.
Thank you very much, President Allen. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Handlers, for that that presentation. It gives a lot more clarity as to the direction that we need to go in as a district and a community. So I wanted to mention, so you were talking, first off, because of the settlement that we got from CDM Smith and those funds not having to do a rate increase on the WRF, I would say is probably much appreciated by many members of this community. With regard to the other areas, and you were saying like single digit, that type of thing, and I figure single digit, that doesn't sound too painful. However, right at the end, you said that you recommended adopting maximum rate increases. So maybe I'm a little bit confused. I mean, those were your words. So is single digit an upper single digit? Is that considered adopting a maximum rate increase?
Okay, Mr. Handlers.
Yes, and sorry for the confusion. Yes, those single to upper single digit rate increases would be what it currently looks like. Where I just wanted to kind of give a broad context so folks know we're not looking at 50% rate increases, nor are we looking at, you know, 1% rate increases. There do need to be some rate increases. And when I say maximum, I meant that in context of when you do a Prop 218 process and you establish rates, you're really establishing the maximum rates. And your district has done this. You've gone back and not necessarily implemented those rates exactly on the schedules that were originally anticipated. You wanted to come back and review. And sometimes the rates have gone in a little bit later. But when you do Prop 218, it establishes the maximum. If you were to get some windfall or you bid out these projects and it came out that your, you know, some project you thought was going to be $5 million and only came in at $1 million, normally it goes the other way, unfortunately. But if something like that did happen, you know, you'd have the ability not to fully implement the rates as adopted. So the maximum is really referred to just the rates that are in the 218 notice. If they were adopted, you can't go above those. But if luck would fall your way, you certainly can defer them or, you know, implement something less.
Great. Thank you. Director Gray?
Just a quick question again, following up on the maximum rates. When you talk about upper single digits, to say is 9%, just a moment, so I'm clear on this, this is over 3 years. Is that cumulatively over 3 years, 9%?
Not yeah, 9%. Per year, for each year for 3 years.
Each year, 9%.
Yeah.
Something, so yeah, I didn't want to give a final number because we didn't finalize everything yet.
Aggressive than having it cumulative. Okay. But that includes inflation.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Director Farmer. Go ahead.
So let's propose the term that was just used there. So an accumulating 9% over 3 years. So doing the quick math, should I arrive at something like 27%? Is that what we're talking about?
If that's what the number ends up to be, it would be, you know, compounded over 3 years, but we don't know the final number yet. But something along those lines.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, and I know you're not necessarily a prognosticator. Let's say that inflation sticks around for a while. And so people, let's say the average person or people in the service industry or whatever that are already being challenged with basic needs, such as, let's say, paying the rent or God willing, the mortgage, or just putting groceries on the table and the increasing. I don't know if you don't live here. Do you live up near the Bay Area?
Yeah, Bay Area.
Right. So it was just in the news yesterday that the highest cost of gasoline in the country is in the San Francisco Bay Area, and the second highest is in San Luis Obispo.
Oh.
So anybody that's traveling for work or anything, I mean, just going to the gas station, if you have an electric vehicle, you know, good fortune for you. But what is going to happen? And like I say, you can't predict anything, and maybe I'm just babbling on here to waste time and hear myself talk, but what happens if inflation continues and we do rate increases and the average person whose salary is probably not going up to match that? What happens to those folks?
Go ahead and answer that, Mr. Handlers. And then I'd like to go to the public for a moment and see if there's any comment there. So please go ahead.
What happens? Well, in terms of the rates, I think we have some, assume some inflation in our projections, you know, 4% per year for planning purposes. And the way these rate studies work, again, we're kind of looking forward. You take action for a few years and then you come back and reassess. But in terms of what's happening with staff there, with cost of living increasing, whether it's gas or my heating costs, whatever, the natural gas prices have skyrocketed too, makes it harder and harder for folks to, you know, put the food on the table, you name it. Housing costs have skyrocketed. So I can't, as you say, I'm not a prognosticator in that, but we did assume that there would be some escalation over time of the operating costs, whether it's for staffing, utilities, et cetera. You know, we're never going to get the projections perfect, but the hope is that the projections are within a reasonable range as they were last time, to, you know, that the rates would keep you moving in the step in the direction you need to take. And then you come back and reevaluate. And if the inflation was much higher than what was assumed and costs have escalated more, Well, that squeezes out a little bit of funding available for your capital program. And it would mean in 3 years, you'd be looking at a little bit higher rate increases as opposed to lower rate increases.
Thank you. Director Seidel, this is a question or a clarification, but if we want to, we need to get to the public and come back to you guys so that we can give Alex the input that he needs. So go ahead.
Yeah, it was actually more of a clarification. The other thing I wanted to mention is that even if we're talking in what ifs, and we are talking about 9%, we're also talking that being more specific to sewer. We're not talking about that being specific to water. We're not talking about that being specific to the SWF. We're not talking about those kinds of numbers against all of our utilities for that period of time. So I just wanted to tap that down a little bit.
Good clarification there. Okay, now I'm ready to call. I see, and we've got one person out there. So I'm going to call for public comment now. And what we'll do there is let's take all the public comment, and then we'll come back to Mr. Handlers if there's anything that he can answer or information he can provide to the public, and then come back to the board so that we can give Mr. Handlers the feedback that he requires. So folks out there, I'm calling for public comment now, and I see that we have Elizabeth Bettenhausen, so please bring her in, Osana. There she is. Welcome, Dr. Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate Mr. Handler, your report today. I found it edifying, and I hope that some of the difficult questions you pose are solved when across the whole United States, inflation goes down to 0%, et cetera, barring that possibility, though, on the other hand. I note again what you mentioned about 2/3 of the users of water in Cambria being at 6 units and below in their use, and 1/3 being above 6 units. And I'm suggesting that the board take into consideration and work with you to figure out how the users who are above the, I'm going to talk only for a moment about single family residential users who are who have two members in the household and use all of that water above the median, that the rates are much more increased than they have been in the past. I think that the high users of water in Cambria should pay more money. And I know that that's then correlated with the sewer, because you aren't judged by how much, whoops, I almost said the word. You aren't charged by how much feces and urine you put into the toilet. You are charged by how much water you use. And so I am urging the board and you, Mr. Handler, to give them some options that show a much more significant increase in the usage of water rates for those who are in the third of the consumers who use more than above the median. I know that this is difficult to do legally, but I would beg Mr. Carmel already to start looking at that, because you can only charge according to the labor and the real costs. But I think that given the climate crisis, the real cost of using so much water compared to what 2/3 of the people use isn't real and actual cost. We just haven't generally figured the ecological cost in with the actual economic cost. And we have to change that, because we are raising the cost to us to the life level. It's no longer just pennies. It is how we support life anymore by our water and sewer use and production. And I thank you very much for making clear that you are soliciting from the board today. I hope that the discussion that now ensues from the board is not the final direction that they're giving you on this, because it would be utterly premature. There has not been a significant discussion, although of what you have just presented, although if I shut up, then there's more time for a significant discussion by the directors. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Do we have any additional comment from the public? I'll give you just a second. Doesn't look like it. Osana, do we have any written comment on this item? No written comment. And last call for public comment on this item. Not seeing any, we'll come back to the board. I have a question, if I could start with that. Mr. Carmel, what is the status? It's my understanding that we cannot use a tiered rate structure to discourage consumption. Is that a true statement?
That's true.
Thank you. So we can't, Mr. Handlers, yes.
You have tiered rates now. We established that with the last rate study. And there is legitimacy, as was pointing out, that, you know, if everyone only used 3 units of water a month, you wouldn't have as much of a water supply issue as you're currently facing. So you do have tiered rates where everyone gets the first 4 units bi-monthly, the first 2 units per month at a lower rate. Then it, you know, elevates from there with 3 tiers. So you actually have that. I do think it's legitimate to do. And you do, although you can't always, you know, you got to be careful with what you do. But for a district like yours, there are some legitimate increased costs to have all your facilities and your water supply there to meet the peak demands, which mm-hmm. are being driven more by, you know, higher levels of water use. So the rates apply evenly to everyone, but those who use the most, not only are they buying more units of water, but they see their rates step up in 3 tiers, water rates and the water reclamation facility rates.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Handlers. It shows you how much I guess I don't use enough water on my water bill to see the tiers coming out. So let's see, I think we're ready now. Folks, we need to give Mr. Handlers some more feedback. Well, first of all, let's see if anybody comes up with anything, and then I'll, Mr. Handlers, I'm going to ask you to ask us questions. Mm-hmm. But first, does anybody else want to dive in here? Okay, yes, Director Gray.
I'll start with following up on the little discussion about tiered rates and the legalities of how much you can tier, how much you can have how steep the tiers can be, essentially. Another part of that question I have, another side of that question is, what is, in your experience, Mr. Handlers, optimal for revenue in terms of how high the third tier, for instance, is versus the lower tier and versus the fixed rate? Is there some optimal revenue model that we're not doing that we could do?
Mr. Handlers?
I don't think there's anything that's optimal. There's always trade-offs, right? And the more you have your tiers, the steeper they are, the less revenue stability you have, because as people use, you know, it's typically the outdoor or the highest level water use. If you're relying on that for a lot of revenues and the use goes down, you lose a lot of revenue. So I think you actually have a reasonable balance where your rates are now, and they're already tiered. You know, the lowest levels of units folks are getting, paying the least amount per unit of water, and it steps up, but there's no like perfect optimal level for it. There's just trade-offs with whatever you do with your rates.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay, anybody else? Yes, Director Green, Vice President Dean.
Okay, so I'm assuming since we have tiered rates now, if we're looking at a 5-6% rate increase on water, it's an equal rate increase across all tiers, correct? Everybody gets a 5-6 rate increase.
Mr. Handlers?
That is what I've been assuming in our projections. So the lowest tiers, the lowest rates, we get, you know, we'll say 6%. You know, I hate to talk, I don't want to put numbers out there, which is why I've been trying to be a little bit vague, because then someone says, you said this percent and it changes. But that's exactly right. The lowest rates, the percentage increase on a low number is less of a dollar amount than the same percentage of increase on an upper number. So even though it's the same percentage that applies to all the tiers, lowest tiers face the lowest dollar increase, and the highest tiers face the highest dollar increase. Mm-hmm.
But it's
that's what I've been assuming.
It's the same percentage across the board, regardless of what tier you're at. Okay. My input on this thing is we need these sewer rate increases. Everybody on this board knows how much this wastewater treatment plant needs to get its work done and how devoted I have been towards pushing getting it done. So, yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Vice President Dean. So a high priority to our wastewater system. Yeah. It's okay. And I see a bunch of heads nodding. Okay. I see Director Steidel, it looks like you have a thought.
Yeah, I was just curious. I feel at a little bit of a disadvantage not having a hard copy of Mr. Handler's report in front of us, because there were some recommendation points and some additional pieces of information that he shared with us as he went through the presentation, which I tried to make notes on, but I'm sure that I've missed something. The water, the just generally, if we go through water, WRF, and sewer, the water, you had indicated that a single digit rate increase for 3 years, which is what we were talking to anyway, the 3 year period. But I'm getting the impression that your suggested rate isn't at the highest level. This is something that is maybe in more in the 3 to 4% range rather than a 9% range, or you're not, you, you're muted, unfortunately.
Okay. So yeah, Director Steidel, are you finished your question?
Yes.
Your observation. Yeah. Direct, Mr. Handlers. Yes.
It's good. I muted myself there. So, yes, on the water side, you know, you're not facing quite the level of capital needs as you are on the sewer side, which is really, I think, the big driver for the sewer rate increases, but you do have needs. So I'm just putting out there, it looks like it's something in the middle single digits, you know, I don't want to, not low single digits, not high single digits, but somewhere okay. in the range for 3 years to get where you need to go.
Okay, but you're expecting to get from us what we want to have you target toward in the development of your information?
No, I'm sorry. I really meant to present this information more as like background and to make sure, you know, you're aware of what some of preliminary findings that we have so far, but the information we're looking to get from the board is, where do we go from here with the rate study in order to vet it, get the input we need to get, and bring it back to the board for, you know, reviewing and moving ahead with the Prop 218 process. So we're not even there yet. So I didn't mean this to be like a presentation of, hey, here's all the recommendations, and just kind of sharing some of the background that we're finding. So you have a sense of the order of magnitude of what we're looking at so far.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Director Gray.
Yeah, the big question I have, and the big thing missing here is the financing package for the SST projects. We don't really know at this point, obviously, do we, what rates we can get, what the term will be, you know, the payback time and all that. Don't it seems to me we need that in hand, knowing what basically we can get with the rate increase before we actually approve the rate increase, don't we? That's my impression. I don't want to just go blind and approve a rate increase that it ends up not being enough, for instance, for the financing we need.
Oh, okay. Can I rephrase that, Director Gray? So the issue is, may we know what the financing options are before we select a rate increase?
I think more than an option. What do we know, and indeed what the financing would be? I mean, negotiate it, and the last step basically is getting the rate increase to finalize the deal. Because, you know, I know that can be done because it was done, you know, somewhat controversially, but it was done for the EWS. The loan was negotiated, and then the rate increase was approved based on the loan. So that can be done. And I would think people would want to know, the rate payers would want to know that there's something that's already arranged for this rate increase to pay for.
Hmm. Yes, Mr. Hill, I'd like to hear something about that too, I think.
Yeah, I don't think you need to know the exact specifics. I mean, we know from our own sake, I mean, our firm is a financial advisory firm that helps agencies get financing. And you also had Brandis Tallman, Rick Brandis is involved as well, you know, looking at this. So we do know the general parameters of what the financing would look like. I can't tell you if you were to issue bonds today that you would exactly get this rate or that rate, but we know within a pretty narrow band what the, you know, the current market interest rates are. So we did build that in, and I always put a little bit of buffer there in the interest rates. And normally, if you wanted to, I mean, there's different ways of doing financing, but normally you'd want to, if you were to try to negotiate a financing without having the rates in place, you know, then you're stuck working with, you know, maybe locking something in that's without having the financial support for it. It might not be the best way to move forward. Often what agencies do is get the rates in place first. And even with your emergency water supply, there were rates adopted to support that at the time leading into that financing. So those rates, I think, were adopted first. But even then, if you look at the security credit for that, it's not just based on the emergency water supply rates. It's backed up also by the water rates and eventually by the district's taxes, because the lender wasn't, you know, they wanted the additional securities in place that they would get repaid. So we're not, we don't want the same thing to happen on the sewer side where you're pledging district's tax revenues towards that as well. We wanted to keep it as a wastewater alone, standalone credit. And I think the numbers that we're building in here are going to be reflective of what you would get with a little buffer. So we're probably assuming interest rates a little bit higher than what they actually were. So I don't think you need to have the specifics lined up first. I think it would be the other way around, with rates being adopted to support, you know, these expected financing.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Handlers. Director Steindl, before I call on you, I just wondered, Ms. Duffield's, her little square suddenly lit up. And so I'm wondering, Ms. Duffield, did you have something you wanted to say in this particular, add to this discussion? Oh, okay. Just wanted to be sure. So, Director Steindl, please go ahead.
So to Mr. Handler's point, I think that our ability to get a better rate on going forward to try to get a loan is going to be predicated somewhat on the idea that we've got something lined up to increase our revenues to be able to support payments on any kind of loan. So I do think that we need to go forward with this process. Now, at some point, we may get into a parallel track for it, as we get, as he's mentioned also, as we get closer to the idea of actually moving the 218 forward. But I do think that we need to be addressing this first.
Okay. Thank you, Director Steindl. Mr. Handler, again, what more can we tell you?
where do we go from here? I mean, would the next step being to go to the district's financing committee before coming back to the board? Or, you know, we just,
okay,
I think the consensus from kind of working with staff and stuff is, let's, you know, at least present the board preliminary stuff what we're looking at. And, you know, what steps would you like to see us take before it comes back to the board with some real numbers?
Good. I think I'm getting a clear picture now. Let me ask the Finance Committee Chair, what is, Director Steindl, what is your opinion?
Yes, I'd like to have the Finance Committee have a presentation from Mr. Handler and in this regard, so that he can address any additional questions that they may have that we're not posing right now from the board. As well as giving them the overview that he's provided to us here and the narrative. I mean, they could get copies of the presentation, but that doesn't address the narratives that have been going on. And I think it's important to have the ability to ask questions of the resource.
Okay, excellent. I think we're getting some direction here. Yes, Director Gray?
I just want to say I agree with that. I don't know if it'll take a vote or not, but I agree with that. It is the best course of action, certainly. Take it to the Finance Committee first. Well,
I think for the sake of clarity, normally I would say maybe we don't need a vote, but I want to be sure that Mr. Handler is very clear and that we've made ourselves clear as to what we want. So I think what I'm hearing is that we're asking that he come to the Finance Committee with the proposal, work out some of the other issues, and then at that point, that will give also us board members a chance to watch that meeting and perhaps learn something in develop. Believe me, we do that too. And so it'll give us a chance to kind of preview the issue, kind of learn what some of the concerns are. And so that when Mr. Handler, when you come back to us, then we'll be more educated and able to ask or offer intelligent questions. So anybody else want to weigh in? But I think maybe just to make things clear, we should probably have a motion that Mr. Handler should bring his report to the Finance Committee first. Oh, maybe we can't do that. I see Mr. Carmel's hand up. We're not doing any consideration, Mr. Carmel, so maybe we can't vote.
We can. It's set up as a presentation and update.
Got it. Okay. In that case, there will be no motion. But if everyone would like to nod their head. Well,
I don't know that we have to have a motion to request that it be brought back. Yeah.
Of course not. It's always clearer though, but I think if we can get a clear, if we get a clear sense of the board's intent, that Mr. Handler can then go and feel confident that he's acting in that way. I see that Jean Weigold has something to contribute. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, President Howell. I think what staff would be helpful for staff is to understand if we have the content right, or the projects that you expect to be financed and completed, embedded in this rate study.
Okay.
And then the other question is, do we have it right to do the majority of the increases over 3 years by doing it all in the first year, spread it out over five? That's the other important point, I think, for Alex. Alex, anything else that we really need?
Yeah, for me, I mean, this stuff hasn't been vetted with your finance committee yet. And so this is kind of more just a broad, informational presentation to you. But I imagine if we met with the finance committee, we'd be getting to some more detail. They may say, well, what if we did it all at once? What if we did it over 5 years? And, are my initial numbers I've been running have been assuming 3 years, which I think is what makes sense based on what I see. Any random input that the board has, but really, we didn't know what process would be for me. That's, where do we go from here in order to come back to the board with kind of some final recommendations or the final alternatives that the for legitimate consideration for moving forward with the rates.
Okay, well, I think, first of all, let me try something here. I think that I get the sense from watching people's faces here that everyone is in agreement that the next step should be to present something to the Finance Committee. So I think I'm not seeing any looks of pain or anything. So I think we can, that's a fairly good certainty. But I think maybe the other aspect, which Jim Weigold mentioned in it, so I think maybe it would be wise to at least have the directors offer their own individual opinions, which is all that they will be, as to how gradual should the rate increase be, and should it encompass all of the projects on the CIP list, or are there some that should not be included in the study? So I think it's just a matter of each one of us saying what we think, because this is not an official action. It's just to give Mr. Handler a sense as to what the board wants. That's what I'm proposing. Is that going to work? Mr. Handler, will that work for you if you just hear from each of us individually?
Sure, but I don't think you need
to.
It'd be nice to hear like general thoughts, like, hey, we really want to look at doing this and I don't think we've kind of even vetted through all the, options, anything through the finance committee yet. So, but any thoughts are welcome, because we want to make sure ultimately that what we bring back to the board is something that the board, it's going to be in line with what the board wants too. So any input along those lines can't hurt.
Good. Well, I'll start off and I'll give you my input, which is very brief, and just to get me out of the picture. And then I see the hands are raised. So from my point of view, a gradual rate increase is preferable to a single hit. And from my point of view, I would like to see the wastewater is of prime importance. So I don't think there's anything that I can think of on that list that should be skipped. As to the water facility, I'm not so certain on that one, but I do. So I'm lukewarm on that one. But of absolute highest priority for me would be the wastewater. Okay, now that's my say. Okay, so let me start with you guys. I see first Director Steidel, then Director Dean, and then Director Gray.
Yeah, and if there are things here that directors feel strongly about as we're going through and doing this, I will try to make note of this so that information can be brought to the Finance Committee as well. And I will request that they watch this meeting also so that they can glean what they can from it. I do think, though, there is something to the point of some things that the GM represented. And I think that, for instance, GM Weigel, could you put the presentation up again and the water and the listing of the challenges? Yes. So I think really, if we were to look at those financial challenges, each of us, and say, okay, are there financial challenges here that we really think can be set aside? In other words, the water meter replacement program, or the potential of the pipeline replacement, the repaying the general fund loan, any of those kinds of things that hit you immediately that we just really shouldn't be considering as part of a rate impact. Now, personally, when I look at those things, I don't see anything there that says, no, we don't need to be taking a look at that. We don't need to be considering that as part of a rate impact. And the idea of having a single-digit rate increase over 3 years, I think even that probably, if there is some expectation of doing something other than a mid-range percentage, like 4 or 5%, the only other option would potentially be to, you know, do front-load it in some way so that monies would come in faster to be able to address these things that we need to address. Any kind of information like that anyone has to offer, I think, would be of value. And so in this case, if nothing else, I think that the rate probably should be for 3 years level loaded. And I do think we should be carrying inflation for another 2 of the 5 years allowed to us, that we should be looking at something that would address that. And the thing to remember in all of this, when we're taking a look at taking these rates to the 218, that doesn't mean they're cast in concrete. And I don't want to, you know, be Pollyanna about it and say that, oh no, well, it doesn't mean that they're really going to happen, because it's entirely probable that they would. But we know from our own experience that we had made adjustments previously when COVID hit. And so we do have flexibility of doing that. But if we go in low, we're just doing it to ourselves. We're better off projecting towards something that's at a rate level that can actually provide us with what we need. And if we find out we don't have to go there, then fine. We have the flexibility of being able to do it. GM, could you take it to the WRF next, please? Okay, so the capital improvements, we do have some flexibility here in that the monies that we got from the settlement do help to address some of the issues that we've got immediately. And perhaps maybe all we need to do is just have a level load over the 5 years for an inflation rate and not be looking to do something above and beyond that. And the preliminary recommendation indeed from Mr. Handler is to hold the line with rates, with no rate increases recommended at this time. But I think that we could also be smart with some very low percentages that would relate themselves to inflation, that particularly if we're going to perhaps take the inflation over the five-year period rather than just whatever is built into the 3 years of rates. So in that case, that's my perspective to the WRF. Then on GM, please, the sewer. So obviously this is where the biggest priority is, or the major priority in trying to get some action going, because our viability in even getting a loan to do the kinds of things that we want to do may well be predicated on the rates that we can put into place. So I agree that paying the general fund loan right now may not be where we want to be drawing down any kind of monies that we may be able to take in. We have been paying the interest on that money, although we have not been paying the principal on a year-to-year basis necessarily. So there is something that is going on with that. I think that we need to be aggressive in getting whatever we can into place as far as the rates are concerned for this, because we absolutely need to be doing this to have a healthy infrastructure for this community, because no matter what's happening, what's going on, if we don't have the sanitation processes available in this community, it's going to be a moot point. They'll just come in and they'll red tag us and, you know, party over. And then we can let the county tell us how we're going to live. So I do think that we need to be realistic. We need to be able to bite the bullet on this one. We need to be able to have a reality check, and we need to take every opportunity we can to explain to the community what this represents and why it's important, and acknowledge the fact that we understand what it means, but we also understand that we have an obligation to keep the community safe. And this is a major piece of it. So I'm inclined even for level loading the upper single rate for the 3 years, and then dropping down to two more years of just some inflationary action. So that's my feedback, and I'm willing to take any more feedback that you have to offer for the Finance Committee in taking a look at this. If anyone else wants to do it in a similar fashion, running through water, wastewater, and sewer, you know, would welcome that. Thank you for allowing me the time.
No problem. Thank you, Director Stradell. I'm sure that's exactly what Mr. Handlers wanted to hear. Seriously, Vice President Dean and then Director Gray.
Okay. I agree with everything Director Stradell said. I do think it should be level loaded across the 3 years. I do think we should consider the inflation increases for the WRF. And I do think we need to continue on 2 years past this three-year rate increase with inflation increases, or inflationary rate, however you want to call them. This is going to the Finance Committee, and part of what the Finance Committee is going to be looking at is whether all of these things are needed within the projects we're looking at for the amount we're going to try to borrow, or that the rates are going to cover. So from an R&I perspective, my opinion is everything on this list is needed. And I am not going to be able to be at the Finance Committee and speak towards any of these projects because I'm a director and Brown Act won't allow it. So I know that the utilities manager, Ray D'Anzo, had input into this process, but my hope is that he will be at the Finance Committee in case there are questions on whether some of these things are actually needed. So I am hoping that Utilities Manager D'Anzo can attend that Finance Committee to help inform the Finance Committee or confirm to the Finance Committee what projects are needed on this. And yes, definitely, in my perspective, the wastewater treatment plant is the most important thing. There are things on this CIP list, on this project list, that have been on there for many, many years, and they need to get fixed, or the people in this town are not going to be able to flush their toilets. So we need to keep this facility running. And I know that this is a real high priority to everybody that works at the wastewater treatment plant. They've been fixing things with duct tape and baling wire for years. And while they're very inventive and creative in fixing things on their own, there's some major projects here that they can't fix on their own, and we need to get them done. So my hope is the utilities manager can attend this meeting. And my hope is also that we can do this as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Dean.
Thank you, President Howell. I'd just like to add, you know, I agree with the thrust of what everybody's saying about the need for the rates on these, and there's a priority to wastewater, for instance. I do think we need to have the inputs very, very clear as to what we need, what things will cost, what we need, what it will cost, and what it will cost to finance. And then how much of that will be payable by what we're getting now, and how much more we're going to need. So I think I think General Manager Weigold was saying something like this. We really do have to have a real clarity going into this about the most up-to-date costs, and also the probable cost of financing. And if in fact it's more, and, you know, it'll cost more than we're talking about now, well, that's where the chips fall. And I don't think we should necessarily rule out a front-loaded increase, because if that is in fact the best way to get the costs, to meet the costs and meet the financing costs, the overall increase may not be quite as much, in fact, as a three-year phased increase. But a front load, which is painful, politically painful, it might actually be less money overall for the ratepayers in the long run. So I'd like to leave that question open. I haven't made up my mind on it. But I think the most important thing is to get the cost inputs in place and a really solid financial projection before we actually say these are the rates, you know, when and how. I also agree, though, on the inflation. Two more years after the 3 years, if we do a three-year rate increase, should be an indexing system. I don't know if we need much of an indexing for the WRF, because the bulk of those costs are fixed and protected from inflation, but maybe a small inflation adjustment there, too.
Okay. Thank you, Director Gray. Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you, President Howell. Now, my comments probably won't be as applicable as my previous colleagues here. Having been on the board since 2016, and one of the first things that I was really emphasizing was the need to address improvements at the wastewater plant. So obviously I'm in consensus there. I guess my concern is, and Mr. Handlers can't necessarily even utilize my comment here, but we live in such an unusual community, and that it's a high retirement community. Many people are fairly well off financially. And then we have a service industry where people are just making it month to month. And of course, I'm thinking about the people that are just making it month to month and how they're going to be hit with, especially if we front load the rate increase. And so that's kind of where my thoughts are. Those are maybe more the people I identify with and think about. And so I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Director Farmer. So Mr. Handlers, does that kind of give you a little sense as to everything? Excellent. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us before we move on?
No, that's very helpful, just hearing everyone's kind of initial concepts, understanding we'll be coming back again. And we'll be going to the Finance Committee first, to vet everything and see where that process takes us. So I appreciate hearing just people's thoughts on this, because that's valuable for me to hear, so we can make sure we're not going off in the wrong direction with what we're doing. And good comments, everyone. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And Director Steidel, I see your hand.
Yes, for Mr. Handler, I just want to know that I'll be circling back with the GM to be in contact with you to find out what your calendar looks like so we can get this slated. And I have no problem with doing this as a special meeting of the Finance Committee. In fact, we had canceled our meeting for this month, almost twofold, because it was very light, but there's the potential of something evolving from this that we may want to address as quickly as possible. So I will be in touch and we'll work out some calendar information.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Steidel. And let me trail on that I'm certainly not averse to having a special board meeting to move this thing forward as well. So, I don't want to get us tied into that monthly two meetings a month, and we each have to continually wait for the next month and a regular meeting. So when the study is ready, and I don't see the directors shaking their heads at me, I think you can count on us being willing to have a special meeting to bring this forward as quickly as possible. One of the concern that we have, or I know that Vice President Dean has, and that I have, is the bids that we currently have for some of the SST items. Those prices were firm only to the end of December. So we know that we're going to be facing some price, and the longer we wait, the higher those price hikes are going to be. So there's every reason to move forward with this quickly. And then the last final thought, I'll give my final thought after Vice President Dean talks. Go ahead.
Okay, I was going to mention the time constraints with the facing increases in the bids for the PG&E IGA thing. But I also wanted to thank Mr. Handlers for all the work he's done up to this point and for this great presentation and his patience and answering all of our questions. Very much appreciated. And you didn't once say at the end of the day. It's a little game I play with Mr. Handlers.
Very good. And I'll just follow the one thing that is say, this is more to the public and to anyone who might be watching or even considering us there. We're looking at the cost of repairing our wastewater system. You cannot really have a decent civilization if you don't have a sewer system that works. We can always cart in water, but to get rid of our waste is a whole nother problem. So that's the one thing that if we had to do everything else, we could deal with, except if the sewer doesn't work, we are we can no longer inhabit this section of the coast. So that's a very important thing to remember. I think at this point, then, I think we're finished with this agenda item. And we have one to go, but I think it might be well for us to take a short break. Is that agreeable to everyone? Yeah, say a 5-minute break? Before we take the...
We are also nearing 5 o'clock, so maybe...
Yeah, let's do all of the above. Let's set a meeting time and then take a short break, if that's all right. So, Director Steidel, did you want to move to extend?
Yes, I'll extend to, let's see, we've got the budget. Yeah. Why don't we say until 5:30? Because we have closed session anyway. So we would probably need to be, even if we deal quickly with this presentation, that we would probably need to be doing that.
I agree with you. Okay, so it's been moved, seconded, moved to 5:30. I'll ask for unanimous consent. Anybody say no if you don't agree? Okay, no one says no. So we'll continue until 5:30. So now, if it's all right with everyone, to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back for the budget, something we've all been looking forward to.
Okay. Can you define the time that we should return?
Okay. It would be 4:48. Is that all right, or do we like even numbers? Let's try 4:48, see if we can't make it 5 minutes. Okay, so see you all in 5. All right, I see everybody. We're all back, ready to commence. So we're now ready for item 8A, which is to receive and file the second quarter budget report for fiscal year 2021/22. So for this, GM Weigel, I guess you could start the presentation. And after the presentation, I'll call for public comment, and then we'll move on with discussion.
Thank you, President Howell. Agenda item 8A is to receive and file the second quarter budget report for fiscal year 2021 to 2022. It's recommended that the Board of Directors receive and file the second quarter budget report for the fiscal year 21-22 and provide direction to staff as deemed appropriate. For your information, the Finance Committee did review this budget report on January 27th and recommended approval by a 5-0 vote. I will pass this over to Finance Manager Duffield for further presentation.
Thank you. Ms. Duffield, you have the floor.
Thank you. So as the Journal Manager said, this is the second quarter budget report. So this covers all activity to date from January 1st of 2021 through December 31st of 2021. This includes all of the budget adjustments that the board has previously approved. If you recall, in August of this year, there were some budget adjustments that were for the carry forwards of projects from fiscal year to fiscal year that were not complete. And also we had several encumbered contracts that we carried forward into this new fiscal year. In addition to that, there were a couple of budget adjustments that happened in the first quarter relating to projects, capital projects. We had a couple of project adjustments that we did. And then we've also had the SAFER grants added as the award of that grant happened for the fire department. We've had a budget adjustment for the facilities and resources truck that was purchased, the lease purchase agreement that happened early in the fiscal year. And most recently, the Prop 68 grant funding was programmed into the budget along with the offsetting capital expenditure that was put in the restroom project. So we have had some activity that's happened throughout the first two quarters of the year. There are no budget adjustments requested during this reporting. All that we know about have been done already. So as you're looking through your detail pages, let me just fast forward to the first page, and it'll be the fire department. So on page 120, just to go over the format of the new reports that you're still getting familiar with. So the column that is labeled original total budget, that is the budget that the board adopted in August of 2021. The column that's labeled current total budget, that would reflect any changes that have happened, like what I was just describing, throughout the year thus far. So anytime you see a difference, like if you go about halfway down the page, you'll see the grant revenue in fire began as an original budget of $40,000, and now it's at $223,811. That's just reflecting the grant that was received. So, and then the detail of those changes is listed below. So that's kind of what you're going to see throughout the pages. You'll see details of budget adjustments or of specific items that have been called out in the budget. The next column is period activity. This reflects the activity that happened in the month ending of this report. So this is actual activity just for the month of December, since this report is being pulled through the end of December. This is just reflecting December's activity. The fiscal activity column is your year-to-date column. So that's going to reflect all activity during this reporting period from July 1st, 2021 through December 31st, 2021. So they're still labeled a little differently than you're used to seeing. So I just thought it was important that we kind of make sure everybody's looking at the same thing and they know what they're looking at. Encumbrances again are any purchase order or contract that we've encumbered. Your difference is the very next column, your variance, favorable or unfavorable. And the key to this last column, so in past when we talk about reporting in the quarterly reports. We've always had this column that says percent spent of the budget. So this column is a little different. So keep in mind, this is the percent remaining, not the percent spent. So it's kind of important that you remember that as you're going through the pages, because it can be really confusing. If you see a really low number, you're going to be like, what? Or a really high number, what's happening? So yeah. Just keep that in mind. So going on to the general fund departments, which includes fire, facilities and resources, pros and administration. We have things that are happening across every one of the budget units related to property taxes. As you know, our property taxes may have a little bit of a variable just because of the timing of when we receive them. We receive a lot of them in December and January, and then we receive a big chunk again in April. So those variances are still occurring, and you're going to see that through each of the general fund budget units. The one thing to highlight in the fire department is they are averaging a little high in their overtime. They've had some challenges with staffing. And so, the fire chief and the general manager working together to identify those blips that have happened and work together, to manage the budget and manage the rest of the fiscal year. In facilities and resources, we still are struggling with the vets hall rental. You'll see that those rents are lower than projected where they should be at this time of year. They should be about 50% of the revenues, but we're still having events booked and then we're having events canceled. So, the activity is starting to spark up a little bit, but it's still not to the levels that it was pre-COVID. I mentioned this to the finance committee, and I think I mentioned this during my finance report or something recently, that the vets hall itself, there's potentially termite infestation in the hall. And, our facilities and resources manager is currently evaluating that. We don't know the timing of when that potential tenting or rid of the termites would happen. We don't know if that will be this fiscal year or if it will end up being able to be in budgeted and put into next fiscal year. And our initial cost estimate is in the range of $40,000 to $45,000. So it's going to be a very expensive repair if that is what is needed. But again, that is still being evaluated and more information will be following with that as we have that information. In pros, we did have a little bit of activity related to the capital projects that are going on there. And that's about all we have going on in pros. In administration, we have an overage that you've probably seen. Let me fast forward to that page for you so you can see what I'm talking about. It is on page 138, and it's about two-thirds of the way down the page, and it's the professional service legal administration department line.
Right.
We are significantly over budget in this area, and this is something that the board will remember that they're aware of, and this is related to the litigation that's been ongoing and the trial and all that with the Windler trial. So we're still seeing invoices come through for the expert attorneys. And so once we have an idea that those bills are going to kind of end, then we'll have a good idea of the total costs that have happened. And we'll be bringing something back to the board to address those total costs. Because remember, anything in the administrative budget is allocated to all the departments based on the allocation schedule. So that'll be a discussion that will need to be had with the board, is if these costs want to come out of reserves or if they in fact want to be spread across to all the departments and increase everybody's allocated overhead. So that will be something that will need to be discussed, you know, at the time that the costs are fully known. So that is all the highlights for the general fund. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have, or we can move on to the enterprise funds, whichever your choice is.
Well, let's see if there are questions on the general fund first.
Okay.
Just, it's a whole lot of stuff to encompass here.
Sorry, I know I'm talking fast. If I need to slow down, just holler and I'll slow down. I'm just trying to get through it so you don't have to extend.
You're good. And it's actually extremely interesting. So don't feel that you have to rush. Let's see, guys, do you have any directors want to say anything at this point? Okay. I think they look all happy, Ms. Duffield. So let's go forward.
Okay. So if we go to the enterprise funds, they start on page 143. Mm-hmm. So if you recall, I think during the first quarter budget report, there was a request out of the finance committee to do a couple of different reports when we talk about the summary reports for the enterprise funds. So the first report that you're going to see on page 143 is a grouping of all the enterprise funds together, water, WRF, operations and capital, and wastewater. The second report that you're going to see is going to start on page 145, and that's going to just group all of the water department funds, which is water, WRF, operations, and capital. And then another separate report was requested just for wastewater. So they're all combined, and then they're separated out for your information. And then they're also listed individually with their detail. And the detail for the water department starts on page 150. So the water department revenue is trending good. You know, we're like at 48% remaining. So that means we've received 52% of our revenue already, which is right in line with where we should be based on our budget. So it's faring really well. Expenditures, you know, there's nothing really out of the ordinary that's going on in expenditures, just like general operations. Capital projects, the utilities manager hit on this a little bit during his utility manager report and the emergency water line repair. We're still waiting on the final cost for that to come forward. And once we know that, we'll be coming to the board to do a budget adjustment. We'll need to do something to recognize that because it is in a capital project. In addition, we need to recognize the grant revenue that's come through for the tank rehabilitation. There was some federal funds that the district has been awarded for that tank rehab. That hasn't been programmed into the budget as well because we haven't received all the detailed information regarding that grant. So my hope is that we'll be able to offset the grant money with the repair project and hopefully make it a net of zero budget impact. But, you know, until we get all the details from both sides, we don't really know that yet. So that's forthcoming for you.
Okay.
And then WRF, same thing. They're faring well with their revenues coming in. They're doing good there. Their operations are faring well as well. So everything looks to be, you know, in line with WRF. I don't have anything that's just standing out to me. And operations or capital, either one. And then wastewater, the same thing. You know, the revenues are, you know, holding steady with what's happening. And then salaries and benefits, the same thing. All of their expenditures in their operational accounts, You know, I don't have anything that just to highlight for you that's really out of whack. Everything seems in line. And then capital equipment, you know, most of that will happen when the IGA occurs. So, you know, most of that is tied up with the IGA. So there's not a lot to talk about in that arena. Attached also for you is an capital improvement project list. And those start on page 173. So what has been updated on this list since the last time you saw this in the first quarter report is the column D as in David. That has been updated to reflect the capital costs that have been expended through December 31st. So if you see an amount in that column related to that project, that is related to those specific capital projects. So we've had a little activity in administration.
Right.
We haven't had any activity thus far through December in the water or the WRF funds, but there's been one pump that was replaced in wastewater, and you'll see that towards the bottom of page 175. I believe that was something that was done in the first quarter. So that is all I have to highlight for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Duffield. Let's start with the board, and then we'll see if there's anybody in the public that has any questions. So board members, yeah, Director Gray.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Duffield, for that fine presentation. Very clear. I had one question about back to the general fund, the decision as to how to pay for the legal costs, the exceptional legal costs you're talking about. You mentioned that there's a decision to be made whether we take it all out of reserves or part of it goes to is taken from enterprise funds through the allocations. How much leeway legally, and this may be a question for the council actually, but how much leeway legally do we have to do that? Because those percentages are, I would assume, fixed, but they're also supposed to represent a share of actual costs, whatever that's, you know, billed to wastewater, billed to water. Can we go beyond those percentages or how does that work?
You're talking about the budget versus what's going to actually happen.
I'm talking about how we, when we come to decide about the how to pay for or how to budget the extraordinary legal costs, the Windler case and so forth, the allocation of that, is it going to be all from the general fund and from reserves, or is there, how much of it, and I think you mentioned this, how much of it could be allocated or paid for from the enterprise funds?
So what I was meaning to say to the board is that customarily, any expense in administration mm-hmm. is allocated out based on our allocation schedule that's approved with the budget.
Right.
To each department, you know, whether it's general fund or enterprise fund. And there's different thresholds for different kinds of costs throughout the allocation schedule. Mm-hmm. So the board has the option to continue with that and allocate those costs across, like they've been allocating every cost in the administrative fund historically. But you also have the option to say, well, this is an exception to that, and we don't want to fund that through the allocated, because it's kind of a special circumstance. Normally our legal costs, anything that happens through the legal counsel line, that just gets, you know, allocated across all the departments. But this is kind of a special circumstance, and it's a lot of dollars at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So it just might be something that you want to consider handling different than you handle the rest of the cost in administration. It's just an option for you to consider.
In other words, you have almost like a binary choice. Either we use the format we have or the schedule we have for allocating costs, or we just pay for it 100% out of reserves.
Correct.
I see.
Either way, it's going to require a budget adjustment.
Sure.
It's either going to be a budget adjustment use of reserves or a budget adjustment, you know, changing the allocation to every one of the departments.
Director Gray, yes, your question sort of involved Mr. Carmel at one point, and I'd like to actually hear from him regarding the issue of the allocated overhead and what kind of restrictions we might have, or is there an argument from a legal point of view that perhaps this is something that we should not allocate but should pay out of the general fund?
President Howell, accounting law and these issues are really outside my wheelhouse. I'd be glad to look at the issue and come back with something, but I'd just be babbling if I tried to answer that question. So I defer to Ms. Duffield on this entirely.
Thank you. That's fair. But I think I could phrase it is we either have it where a certain portion of the legal expenses will end up being paid for by rates, versus the other possibility of having 100% of the legal expense paid through property tax. That's basically the way I would understand that. Is that correct, Ms. Duffield? Is that?
I guess.
I mean,
depending on what fund you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Director Steidel.
I guess, and this actually would be a follow-on question to Mr. Carmel in his looking into the situation. Is there some practical manner in which to assess a portion of those expenses that would be distributed, with the balance or the majority of it being picked up by the general fund reserves? It's just a variation on the theme. I don't know if there's any kind of flexibility or leeway in that at all.
Yeah.
I have to repeat my last answer. I just don't feel comfortable answering the question because I don't know the answer.
Right.
I'll look at it.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds interesting problems here. Let's see. Director Dean, Vice President Dean.
Okay. I'm not as financially adept as everyone else, so my questions may not make as much sense as everyone else's. But you mentioned that we still don't have the actual funds in hand from the grant that Mr. Carbajal got for us, but that when we did, it would offset the cost of the water main repair. That grant was supposed to be for the Stewart Street tanks. It is my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we already had the Stewart Street tanks in the budget, and this grant was going to offset that replacement of those tanks. So basically, we're going to be balanced across the board. Even if the grant funds used to offset the water main repair, we still originally had the Stewart Street tanks in the budget, not considering the grant. Is that correct? Did I make any sense?
You're correct. So we did budget for the Stewart Street tank, but because we didn't know the outcome of the grant, we did not put the grant in the budget.
Okay.
So the water fund truly has $425,000, I believe, is what the Stewart Street tank budget line item is. So if we program the revenue into the budget, then that expense basically goes away.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure the Stewart Street tanks were still covered.
They're still covered. They would, that expense would actually be offset by a grant. So that cost to the district might be zero, or whatever the difference is between construction and what we have for the grant.
Okay.
So adding the additional $300,000 to $400,000 or whatever it is for the emergency line replacement, it might all net out to zero. Because we still haven't programmed the grant yet.
Okay. And I have one more question. Go ahead.
So usually what we do is once we get awarded the grant, there's usually an award package that has to be approved and would come back to the board, and a resolution would be required and the granting documents and whatever. And we would do a budget adjustment at that time to recognize the grant we've received. That hasn't been done yet because we haven't received any grant paperwork to move forward with that grant. So that's what I was saying. Hopefully we'll get that information along with getting the final cost of making that water line repair. And then we should hopefully be able to bring something back to the board to solidify both of those items, maybe at the same board meeting. That would be the hope.
Okay, appreciate that. And I appreciate your explanation of all the headings across all of these columns. They make a lot more sense to me now. but I have one more question. Quite a few members of the public have been asking me, in what fund under WRF is the settlement funds, are the settlement funds that we got from the CDM Smith lawsuit? Because they don't see them as a separate identified item in here. So is it in the WRF operations, or which is looking at the budget amount, it appears to me that it probably is, but they wanna make sure that that money was set aside because it was supposed to go towards whatever we had to do with the brine pond.
So these funds for the settlement funds were received last fiscal year.
Okay.
So you don't see them reflected in incoming revenue or outgoing expense for this fiscal year. They're actually sitting on our balance sheet in reserves. Because they were unused at the end of the last fiscal year. I believe it was January or February last year that we received those settlement funds. And it was received in the capital fund.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that gives some clarity. So the budget is really, it's what's happening during the year.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I think there may be some confusion amongst folks as to the difference between the budget and the balance sheet. Well, thank you, Ms. Duffield. Before we close on that one, I do want to call for public comment, but I want to make one final statement. In reading this budget, my impression is, and tell me if I'm mistaken, is that financially the district's actually in pretty good shape, that we don't have a lot of surprises. Income seems to be supporting our expenses, even in the face of all the unexpected things that happen. So is that a correct impression? Am I correct in thinking that we're actually, in other words, it's okay for me not to worry?
Don't worry. We're fine.
Well, that's encouraging, actually. Yes, Vice President Dean.
I just wanted to say that just the fact of having Ms. Duffield as our finance manager relieves a lot of my worry, because I know she knows what she's doing and she's taking care of us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you all, Director. So I'm going to go to the public now, and I do see that we have Dr. Bettenhausen would like to speak. So, Osana, would you please bring her in? Welcome back.
You there?
Yeah,
she's here. Yeah. Go ahead, Dr. Bettenhausen. You are unmuted.
Yeah. I don't know, Dr. Bettenhausen, if you're speaking, we are unable to hear you.
Looks like she's still muted.
Yeah, I see that.
Muted right now. Okay, let's do this again. Oh, there we go. Go ahead.
Yeah, she's unmuted now, but well, this is a problem. Not quite sure what's happening here. Maybe let's try one last thing, and then we may have to move forward and try to deal with this in another way. How about sending her back to the attendees and bringing her back in again as a panelist? See if that'll work.
I can also just allow her to talk, because I think people are having issues finding their mute and unmute buttons for some reason when they switch over to promote.
Well, let's do that then. Let's
okay, let me do that. for her, allowed to talk. Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Bettenhausen.
Hallelujah. Hey, I got your facial reaction. You can hear me. I have only two quick questions. Is it possible, and perhaps the district council will have to answer this one, is it possible that should the CCSD and Slo County win the Windler case in the lawsuit currently underway that might come to a decision by the judge in April, are expenses for the CCSD covered in that possible victory or not? And then my second question is, since the excellent budget report, I certainly second Vice President Dean's comment about the finance manager, whoever hired her was a genius, as she tends to be as well. But my comment, I realized that this budget you just looked at is just closing on December 31st. Am I correct in assuming that the monies you are agreeing to spend on the skate park depend upon an agreed board action on the MOU that's still pending, and that when you do agree with that MOU, whatever it says, that will show up in the third quarter report of this fiscal year budget? That's why it's nothing's in there now, because that ended on December 31st. So those are my two questions. $500,000 plus on the professional services is a great deal of money. And if it's possible that the Windler people have to pay us if they lose, hallelujah. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. So, Ms. Duffield, would you care to answer? Well, let's see. Mr. Carmel can answer the one question. Let's let him go first, and then Ms. Duffield, you go second. So, Mr. Carmel?
Fortunately, if we prevail in the Windler case, we do not get attorney's fees. And even more unfortunately, if the plaintiffs prevail in the Windler case, we pay their attorney's fees. That's why that case is so important.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. Okay, Ms. Duffield, I think then the other question was regarding the skate park, yeah.
Correct. So the board, we brought a budget adjustment to the board, I believe in December, and the board they wanted more questions answered before they went forward. So the skate park discussions are ongoing. And there has not been a budget adjustment approved by the board at this point. So depending on the timing, if it happens before, by the second meeting in March, then that would be reflected in the third quarter report. If it doesn't happen until April, May, or June, then that wouldn't happen until the final budget report. So it's just dependent upon the timing.
Excellent. I think that pretty clearly states it. Do I have any other questions from the audience? All right, seeing none, back to the board. Before we close out this item, is there any final thing that anyone would wish to say? Again, our great thanks, for the excellent work. And it, as I said, I have great confidence that the district is headed in the direction that it needs to go. I think at this point we're ready then for future agenda items. And so if anyone has one, let's see. The issue about starting non-remotely is actually already been mentioned by Director Gray, so that's on my list. Director Farmer brought that up today. Do we have any other? Yes, Director Dean, Vice President Dean.
Do we need to extend the meeting? And then I have a future agenda item.
Okay, let's extend the meeting first. I forgot what we're talking about in closed session. So do you think we can get away with it if we go to 5:45? Let's try that.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Okay. Apparently everyone is in agreement. Nobody is disagreeing. So, okay, unanimous consent to go to 5:45. Okay, now Director Dean, yeah.
Okay, there's been quite a bit of concern of the public with some of these will serve letters for detached structures with guest quarters. When Director Farmer and I did our intent to serve ad hoc committee and made our recommendations, our recommendation was that a policy be considered for all will serves for new projects on existing commitment lists, and that those be projects brought forward before the board, and that we did not include the minor remodels or additions to existing structures in this policy. However, there are several four of them went through actually the North Coast Advisory Council last month that were all detached structures, garages with guest or studio quarters above them. And I think we need to bring back to the board whether we want to have those particular will serves. I'm not talking about minor remodels or additions, but the ones that are detached structures with guest quarters above them, if we should be bringing those before the board for transparency and review. I listened to the Coastal Commission discussion on ADUs. The county has been recommending that people consider applying for these as guest units instead of ADUs because the Coastal Commission's turning down ADUs. So I think it would be helpful if we discussed having a policy just to bring for transparency these detached units before the board.
All right. Okay, we'll add that to a future agenda.
Gray probably has a comment on that.
Oh, Mr. D'Anzo, do you have a comment on that?
I think I would jump the gun. I think it's appropriate to have an ad hoc committee, and I can discuss it there with them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Anybody else? Any other futures at the moment? All right. Then I think we are ready to adjourn to closed session. I need to call for public comment for the closed session. Let's see. So I'm going to do that. I am now. We are ready for item 10A, which is a closed session conference with labor negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The representative is Timothy Carmel, and the employee organization is the Management Confidential Employees. So I'm calling for public comment on this item at this moment. We'll give it just a quick second here, give people a chance to consider if there's something they want to say. And while they're thinking, Osana, do we have any written commentary on this issue? Okay, no written comments, and I see nobody in the public wishing to speak. So at this point, we can adjourn this meeting to closed session. And I don't have a gavel. I'll just clap my hands. So we are now adjourned to closed session. So see you all in a moment.